Sorry, yes.
Shoot.
Arnell?
Here.
A guy?
Here.
Beanstalk? Blazik? You see, Dr. Blazik? Dr. Blazik?
Okay. Here. Blazik? I'm here.
Brady? Brownstein? Christensen? German? Laut?
Here.
Snell?
I'm here, Susie. Trisheri, sorry.
Thank you. So
absent. Is that six?
It is. So absent currently is Beanstalk, Brady, Brownstein, Christensen, and Jermaine.
Okay, thank you. Moving on to agenda item number two, I'll make a motion that we approve the open session minutes from July 25th.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries, none opposed. Do we have Jessica on with us? Ryan, do you know if Jessica's here?
So we've anticipated this question 3 months in a row. And so Yasmin sent an email to her yesterday reminding her, and the hope is she'll be here. Christina or Yasmin, do you have any input on this?
Hi, this is Christina. I just sent Jessica an email right now. I'm hoping she gets back to me within the next few minutes.
Okay.
This is Ryan, Dr. Hero. I want to jump to item four. I know this has been on a couple times, and I think we really just gets tired. I don't even know that this is as important to you as the author of the letter as it is to the author of the letter, but I'm happy to have a conversation if you want to talk about it while we wait on Jessica.
Sure, go ahead.
So, and Dr. Caputo's on too, so Dr. Caputo, feel free to jump in. Dr. Caputo and I were both contacted by a CRNA regarding the possible formation of a committee at the Arizona Board of Nursing, and there was some instruction back to the CRNA that they wanted to make certain they got support from the dental community and the dental board if that were the case. And so that's why the document that's in your packet is in your packet. Ali, I'm not sure that you know much about this, but if you know anything, feel free to chime in. And Dr. Caputo is on as well.
It's news to me. I saw the agenda item. Other than that, that's the extent of my knowledge of it.
What page is it on?
It's on page 71. Oh, it's the second to last page of the entire document.
I think maybe to provide a little more background, the idea that Chase had in a couple of conversations that him and I participated in was this opportunity, as we had discussed on previous occasions, of potentially building greater collaboration with the nursing board. So whether it becomes a committee or not, to Ryan's comment, we're not necessarily sure. We're just trying to reach out to the nursing board to basically say, is there an opportunity for us to work together in some way to do a better job, I guess, in the services that we're providing in this dental arena and care for our patients at a higher level based on that collaboration. And so really this is a feeler. And the idea was to get board approval. I guess it came to this committee to get your input to, and thoughts. But if the board were to approve it, and if the committee recommended to the board to approve it, it just begins the dialogue process. Doesn't say anything's going to happen. It's not holding anybody to anything. It's just, is there an opportunity for us to increase and improve how these two boards work together, particularly on this topic or subject of CRNAs working in the dental environment, and how we might be able to do that better, and certainly appreciating perspectives that they may bring up that we haven't even thought of. So it's an opportunity to talk, really. Thank you.
Ali.
I think it's a great idea. And it's one that's, like I said, I didn't know about this letter, but one that's been brought up a few times over the last 2 years about having basically like a dental anesthesia committee or task force or whatever that has equal representation of all of the various professions that provide dental anesthesia. I know before we talked about it being an issue of, you know, that it would need legislation because it would be a new regulatory body. So I guess I heard you, Brian, say at the beginning that it would be a committee on the nursing board. But how, I think it's a great idea, I guess is where I'm coming from, but I'm trying to think of how it would actually work as far as having this committee, what regulatory body it would ultimately fall under that has this reputations from the dental community, the nursing community, and the medical community to provide advice and recommendations. I think it's a great idea. I'm just a little curious about, and Dr. Caputo, I think it sounds like you know more about where this is going than I do. Would it fall under a certain regulatory board, or would it be some sort of collaborative committee that would probably need some legislative push to be able to make it formalized if it was underneath, you know, that's basically four different boards, you know, for the osteopathic, medical, dental, and nursing.
I would say that I wouldn't get too hung up on calling it a committee. I know Ryan used that word, and it's really just an opportunity to start the conversation. Whether it becomes a committee or not, I don't know. I mean, obviously that's going to be something for those parties to pursue and consider. It just may be that a meeting happens and the discussion is great and people are interested and folks say exactly what some of the things you raised, Ali, in terms of this is what we can and cannot do. We just don't know. I think the larger issue is there an opportunity for us to collaborate better as a board amongst boards, with this type of, interdisciplinary, if you will, committee or group of people, however you want to look at it.
Well, I think other than, you know, maybe the group supporting the initiation of a conversation about it, that's about all we can do right now. I don't think we should devote much time to what this would look like. How would we approach it? Should we start a conversation with the nursing board? We're in favor of that. Great. And then let's move on. Dr. Blazek.
I was just going to comment that I agree. I applaud the letter and the efforts, and maybe don't reinvent the wheel. Maybe there's another state that has something similar. Tomorrow I have a big meeting with the District 6 AMIS representatives. So it's six states here west of the Mississippi, basically, that I'll throw that out there to see if there's any other states that kind of have a similar board. I applaud the idea. Great idea. And I certainly would support it.
Thank you, Dr. Blazek. And I see Jessica's on. Ryan, did you have a comment? Your hand's up.
Yeah, just one last comment on this topic. I do know that the final draft of 1602 that was finally adopted in the law does state that there has to be a better collaboration between four boards: the dental board, the osteo board, the medical board, and the board. So it may have already been addressed simply because 1602 makes a requirement. There's more on the other three boards that they have to do because there is not a collaborative effort right now. The dental board was already doing that. And so I'm not sure what they're doing. We haven't even been, this board, at least for staff's perspective, hasn't even been a part of any conversation except on an initial conversation that they wanted to be as directors to cover the topic. So I think legislatively, maybe it's already been fixed, and maybe the intent of this letter, while great, may not need to be served, have another purpose to be served.
Okay. Then I think we should go back to agenda item number 3, and Jessica, why don't you launch us off?
Well, did you want to dispose of that agenda item, Dr. Hero, or?
Yeah, I mean, I think the focus today needs to be getting through the rulemaking process, and then we can come back to this letter on a board level, because I know this is the last meeting for this committee, or if the board feels that the continuation of this committee is necessary, then we can talk about it at that point.
Okay.
So, Jessica, why don't you take us away?
I can hear you guys. Can you guys hear me?
We can.
Wonderful. Okay, let me see if I can share my screen. Give me 1 second. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can.
So for some reason, I am not able to share my screen right now. Yasmin, is there a way that you can share your screen?
Who's controlling the meeting?
Yasmin, do you need to give her some sort of privilege to share?
So you should be able to share your screen, but I can try while. All right, I will just need a little bit of help trying to remember where the committee left off last time. But you should be able to see my screen.
Thank you, Yasmin. I don't know what's going on, if it's on my end or what, but for some reason I can only pull up the meeting or the document, not both at the same time. I believe we, and feel free to correct me, but I believe we left off at 13. Let me see, just check. 13.
Be able to make edits if Jessica's screen isn't presented.
What was the question?
How are we going to, generally when we go through this with Jessica's screen presented, she's able to edit and put in comments and so forth as we go through. If her screen's not being presented, how are we going to be able to have a productive meeting?
Yasmin is using a Word document and she'll be able to do it, but it may take a little more effort. This is not a PDF that you're looking at. It's an editable document that she's posted.
Oh, it's a share. So if Jessica can make changes to this document, it'll show up on Yasmin's.
Yeah, so Yasmin can share this one with Jessica, and Jessica can then make edits and it should show up.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay, so correct me if I'm wrong. I think we stopped at, I had 1302 comments about the fact that we are repealing 1306, which is the continuing education requirement. Is that what the rest of the committee recalls as well?
I got off the last call at 5, and when I got off the call, we were in 1303.
Yeah.
Talking about the requirements of ACLS. With bringing in a qualified anesthesia provider versus if they just needed those permits on their own. But maybe you guys bounce back to 1302.
This is Heath. I think, Ali, you're right. We were doing that, but that was part of sections that we were cleaning up in 1301. So we kind of did there was nowhere, since we took out 1306, there was nothing for continuing education and stuff. So we kind of bounced back between the different sections for that. But I think where Jessica has us here is actually where we ended as we were going through sequentially through the document.
Gotcha. Okay.
So if I'm not mistaken, I think that still leaves us at 1302 and the continuing education requirements, whether or not the continuing education requirements that used to be in 1306, which we're getting rid of, have now been adequately addressed in 1302. So Yasmin, I am looking at the top of page 16. Yasmin, is there a way that you can show the comments if you go to the review tab in your Word program? There should be a button for markup versus all markup.
Give me a moment. I'm on the Google version, so let me pull up the Word document.
Okay.
And I just shared this one with you as well, in case that helps with the sharing.
Okay. And I apologize, guys. I've been having computer issues for quite some time, and I actually ordered a whole new system that was supposed to be in today, and of course Amazon said that it would not be in today. So I'm just working with one screen, which I think might be the issue with the screen sharing.
Jessica, this is Ryan. Do you want to try when you do the screen share to where it says tab, you can select or a window, and then you can select the document that you share under window, and that should maybe fix the problem.
Yeah, I would like to say yes. I have tried, and it's not even showing as an option. How's that? Does that work?
Yes.
Yes, we can see that now.
Fantastic. Okay. So I think this is where we left off. We're in 1302, moderate sedation.
Looks like Dr. Christensen just joined.
Present.
Dr. Lout.
Yeah, Jessica, what page is that on in the packet?
Oh, goodness.
21.
In the
packet. Like 21.
Like 21. 21, thank you. Okay, thanks.
So like I said, and I think one of you commented, we kind of bounced around when we started talking about continuing education to make sure last time that we were getting all the right requirements in the right sections. I think that left us at 1302 and what continuing education requirements are needed in 1302 if we're getting rid of 1306. So here is the language that's being repealed from 1306, and the question is whether or not it needs to be in 1302.
Dr. Snell.
Jessica, I think we put the continuing education stuff in 1302I. At least on the document that I have. Is page 24 of the PDF. Or page 19 of the rulemaking, I have letter I in there, and it's got a lot more than what I see on your screen. Wait, the blue writing right above it. Yeah, so on yours it's it's H. And then I is not bolded, but it should be bolded right underneath H. That's the continuing education requirements that we added already and agreed to.
So I just may be not following correctly, but H seems to be talking about intraosseous access.
Yeah, sorry, Jessica, I confused you. H is independent by itself. I is the continuing education section. And I wouldn't go through that yet because they're off anyways. Jessica, you have to redo that.
But, that's okay.
Okay.
So, ignoring the reference here to I, which obviously is not accurate, but do these requirements meet what you need for the 1302 permit renewal?
I believe they do. I think that's what that's kind of where we ended last time. We discussed the continuing education requirements for the renewal requirements for 1301 and 1302, and that's where that came from. But if someone else wants to speak, that means.
So are we all comfortable then with these requirements, or do we need to make changes?
Number two there says complete at least 10 general anesthesia or deep sedation cases per calendar year. This is moderate sedation. We're in the moderate sedation category, so we'd have to amend that.
So it should just be moderate sedation?
Yes.
And just to mention a side note, there is a word that needs to be edited in section C above that. It's kind of along the same lines. In section C, it talks about the 1305 pediatric endorsement, and it defines that the pediatric endorsement for a 1302 means that they can do enteral moderate sedation, but section C starts out by saying before administering parenteral moderate sedation to a child under the age of eight. It just, the first sentence doesn't jive with the end of the sentence, so we need to make that congruous there too, or congruent. So right there, if you scroll back down to C, you see right there it says, before administering parenteral moderate sedation in a dental office or clinic to a child who is less than eight. So it's saying, you know, in essence, to to administer parenteral moderate sedation, you need a permit. And then right below it, it says you can't do parenteral moderate sedation. You have to do enteral. We just need to make that paragraph read properly, because someone could read that and say, wait, it says I can do parenteral, and then it says I can only do enteral. Does that make sense?
So it should be you can't do parenteral or any lesser?
I mean, you could almost get rid of that first sentence. So it just reads, a dentist who obtained a Section 1302 permit with a pediatric endorsement pursuant to this section may administer enteral moderate sedation and lower levels of sedation to a patient who is less than 8 years of age. And maybe right there it should say, but cannot administer parenteral moderate sedation to a pediatric patient.
At all?
Yeah, that's what we decided as a committee, is that the 1302 pediatric endorsement would allow them to do the same thing as a 1303 pediatric endorsement. In other words, enteral moderate sedation, not parenteral, to a child. But the first sentence starts out by saying, before administering parenteral moderate sedation to a child, you know, it's a very confusing wording. So you adjusted it there. Let's see.
Well, I mean, it says a dentist who has obtained a 1302 permit with a pediatric endorsement pursuant to this section may administer enteral moderate sedation. Is it that they can't administer, parenteral?
Yes.
Ah.
Yeah, to a pediatric patient less than 8 years of age.
We are talking pediatrics here, yeah?
Yeah.
So you're trying to say that by virtue of the language that you're proposing now, that it is okay for a general dentist with a Section 1302 permit to administer enteral moderate sedation for a pediatric patient only, or in addition to?
I'm just going back to what we decided as a committee.
No, I understand.
As a committee, it was decided that the 1302 pediatric endorsement for a dentist with a in essence, an IV sedation permit, right? A parenteral moderate sedation permit, that they could sedate pediatric patients to the level of a 1303 permit, but not via IV moderate sedation.
Right. There's a difference, but you're splitting the hair, and I know I'm saying you, but I'm obviously talking about the committee. You're splitting the hair to say that they can do enteral sedation, which is lower, which makes sense, but you're also saying that the committee agreed that they could do pediatric enteral sedation if they get the pediatric endorsement?
Yes, that's what. So, you know, a 1303 permit holder can do enteral moderate sedation on a pediatric patient, right? So then they said the 1303 can do that, and they said the committee decided that a 1302 permit holder could also do enteral moderate sedation for a pediatric patient, but that they could not do parenteral moderate sedation for a pediatric patient.
Okay. I think you guys are working really hard to make consistent sections when I don't see why a 1302 permit holder should be able to see children at any level. It's not the training that they get. That's not how those courses are designed. And I think you're missing the boat here, but obviously that's your decision. I don't want to delay your meeting, but I don't think you guys should allow that pathway at all, but I'll leave that up to you. Sorry for the interruption.
And actually, Anthony, I do agree with you to a certain extent, which is why I think it's important to address, because we don't want 1302 permit holders doing parenteral moderate sedation, and that's at least better than the way it read 5 minutes ago.
That's just grammar, though, Matthew. I mean, there's a larger issue here than the grammar. But anyways, I'm not trying to delay your meeting.
Yeah, I actually do agree.
Dr. Snell.
I think what Dr. Arnell has identified there is great, and the way it's written there is well written. Keep in mind, for someone to get a 1302 permit with a pediatric endorsement, they have to fulfill and satisfy the demands that we've listed for a pediatric endorsement. So my guess is there's not going to be many 1302 permit holders like myself that are even seeking that out. But if there is someone, we're not limiting it. We're making it open, and they can go through that same avenue as anyone else and get that pediatric endorsement if they're doing pediatric cases. I know some people that have a 1302 permit but rarely use the parenteral sedation side of it and use a lot more of the enteral side. They just went and got more continuing education to be able to understand better IV placement and usage and stuff. So I don't think we should limit it. I think it's great the way it is.
So, and then, Jessica, it's the way it reads right now. Let's see. It looks like you're still editing it, but it just should say that they may not administer parenteral moderate sedation to a pediatric patient.
Period, no matter what?
No matter what.
Can they issue any other kind of sedation to a pediatric patient?
Only enteral.
But only if they have a pediatric endorsement?
That's correct.
They cannot administer enteral sedation to a pediatric patient, period.
They cannot administer parenteral with a P, but they can administer enteral with an E if they get the pediatric endorsement. That's what the committee decided. I'm just repeating what was decided by the committee.
Okay. Give me just a second then.
So.
And I apologize because the reason I'm struggling is we are in 1302, which, if I'm not mistaken, is parenteral, right?
Yes.
So we're basically saying that they cannot get a pediatric endorsement for a 1302 permit. They can get a pediatric endorsement for enteral, which is a different section.
Yes, they.
Okay.
But we're putting it in this section to say that when a 1302 permit holder applies for a pediatric endorsement, that they're limited to enteral sedation. They cannot provide parenteral sedation. So if you go back to C, I can tell you exactly how it should be edited, and then we can, as a committee, decide if we agree with that or not. But.
Well, I'm thinking if they can't do parenteral sedation on a pediatric patient, then we shouldn't have a pediatric endorsement for a 1302 permit, period, because that is for parenteral, right?
Well, this is the thing. The pediatric endorsement has to be tied to a permit, correct?
Right.
So if they have the 1302 permit, then their pediatric endorsement is tied to their 1302, but it's a limited permit. And we just reference the standards of the 1303 and say they can provide services up to the standards of the 1303.
Got it.
I was just going to recommend what Dr. Arnell was saying for Jessica. I think he has the verbiage written in his mind pretty well if she just wants to type that out. And then we can have that and we can agree if we like it or not and move forward.
So, Jessica, if you just remove that first sentence completely and then leave the second sentence as is, and then we'll add a little statement at the end of the second sentence, and I think that should take care of it.
Okay, give me 1 second. And just to clarify, if the patient is 8 years of age, can they do parenteral?
I believe the way it's written and the way the committee decided, yes, because it's less than 8 is what this applies to, right?
Okay.
Can I just make a comment? This is Blazek, regarding, you know, this topic in 1302. Essentially, we have the same statute that we had prior to us all getting together, with the exception of the addition of the pediatric endorsement. So in other words, prior to us getting together, a 1302 permit could provide anesthesia, enteral anesthetics, to anyone at any age. There was really no oversight over people under 8. Am I correct in that thinking?
Yes, I believe so.
Yes, I believe so as well. That's the way I read it. As a 1302 provider myself, correct?
So in effect, what I'm saying, and I really appreciate Dr. Caputo all the time too, and his insight and what we're all doing in the grammar aspect of it too, but I believe this is a safer oversight of anesthesia that is saying, look, if you're treating under 8, you got to do some more training and you got to have some shown, you know, that you do it routinely. So, you know, I'm for polishing this grammar up and having this pediatric endorsement. I think it's a good move.
And Jessica, I'm reading it right now. I think you did a better job. I like the, I mean, it makes it really clear with that first statement, and then it gives the avenue via the second statement. If I'm trying to read it right now, it's a little small.
Dr. Caputo.
Randy, just to echo your point, you're correct on the previous language. And I understand the thought about polishing it up or changing it to make it potentially safer. But here's what I would propose the committee members to think about. The current training that's out there for dentists that want to get trained in parenteral sedation, moderate sedation, does not include pediatrics. So there's no training in pediatric that these dentists are receiving. So I think if you really wanted to make this safer, you do exactly what Jessica said, is you have language in there and says that if you have this permit level of a 1302, you cannot see or treat any patient 8 years of age or younger parenterally or enterally, because they're not getting the training anyways to do that. It's a whole different level. When folks go to get even enteral training in pediatrics versus adults, they're two different pathways. So I'm just proposing to the group to consider that, and I'm very familiar with the training programs that are out there. Generally speaking, dentists aren't getting that level of training. And I would also have the committee consider that if you have a child that's under 8 years old and requires sedation, it's probably more than what that general dentist really has the capacity to manage, and probably should have a dedicated anesthesia provider in there or refer them to a pediatric dentist. I just think you're safer shutting this pathway down than embracing it this way. Thank you.
Heath and then Matt.
So if you go to section D, I don't disagree with Dr. Caputo, and I think it's just maybe misaligned a little bit, because we're putting in the pediatric endorsement under 1302 to make it clear for myself, who's a 1302 provider, I'm going to read 1302 section. And if for some reason I want to see peds as a 1302 provider, then I'm going to look in that section and see that the pediatric endorsement's tied to the 1302 permit. And then I'm going to see section D, which I think we need to clean up, but I have to have completed a CODA accredited residency program that has a standard for pediatric anesthesia training, even to be considered to be able to see pediatric patients under 8 to do even enteral sedation on them. So a general dentist who went and did a weekend course and got the training wouldn't even be able to apply for a pediatric endorsement, and therefore all this concern about them doing it because they're not trained, in my opinion, goes out the window.
Matt.
So I was just going to say that I do agree with what Anthony is saying. I think this new language is a step forward. It at least lets people know they can't be doing parenteral moderate sedation on pediatric patients with this level of license. But I also would support just saying for a 1302, you shouldn't be sedating under the age of 8. Now, I hadn't considered what Heath said. Can we scroll down and just because I'm reading that section now, if that truly is what it says, Heath, that in order to even do it, you have to have a residency, then I'm okay with that.
So I think we need to change D to mimic more what 1303 says, because this is what 1301 says. And if we're allowing them to do enteral sedation, to me, it should mimic what 1303 says, which is similar. I think it's for the pediatric dentist. They've done a CODA accredited residency. But I would consider that more applicable. And I keep in mind, it's not just general dentists that we're talking about that have 1302 permits. And that's probably the bulk of them, but it's not limited to them. So I think we should allow that path. I mean, there's more general dentists that have a 1303 permit that we're saying if they choose to, they can get an enteral sedation pediatric endorsement and go see kids. But somehow myself, who did a residency, because I have a 1302 instead of a 1303, all of a sudden I can't sedate kids. Like, to me, there's a mismatch there. So I understand we don't want 1302 providers that did a weekend course sedating kids under 8. I think putting in that provision of to do this, you need a pediatric endorsement, and this is what it's going to require, and it's the same as the 1303, which includes a CODA accredited residency. I think that takes out those worries and concerns.
Yeah, I think you've actually thought that out pretty well. I do agree.
Dr. Blazek.
Well, that was going to be my comment was, if it includes the CODA approved residency, then we're obviously limiting it to probably pediatric dentists and above, dental anesthesiologists, oral surgeons, CRNAs, and MDAs. It's interesting, I think, because I wonder how we didn't fall into this kind of trap with the previous language, I guess. Is it just that the guys that had 1302s, the guys and girls, they said, well, I'm not doing kids because I know I didn't get trained on it, you know?
I think, Randy, I mean, if we're being honest, how many 1302 guys are going to try to start an IV on an 8-year-old? Like, there's been no, that I, to my knowledge, bad outcomes because it just doesn't happen.
Doesn't happen, right. You're probably right, Heath. Yeah.
Yeah, I was... In my former life, I was a 1302 permit holder, and that was the last thing I wanted to do, and I didn't know anybody that wanted to do that.
So, Dr. Caputo, you're saying, man, if we say this, maybe we're going to speak it into existence, which that's kind of an interesting – I agree. I mean, you know.
Dr. Lout.
Yeah, I wanted to toss this out there. I know there's some AGD programs that they do some IV sedation, but they also do some sedation on kids, enteral sedation on kids. So I didn't want to, you know, exclude that group from this. So I just thought I'd toss that to the committee.
So right now, I don't want to jump to 1303, but it was brought up. Is the language written that you have to do a COTA accredited residency in order to get a pediatric endorsement with a 1303?
Yes, it is.
No general dentist would be able to provide oral sedation for a child less than 8 years old.
It doesn't say that.
If you go to section 1303D2, it does say that.
Well, you guys, you just voted a couple meetings back changing the number of patient experiences a general dentist has to have. So if it's not in there, you got to add it. But because otherwise you're saying that no general dentist can get the pediatric endorsement, but there may be just confusion and maybe the current language, but you guys voted at a previous meeting about this. So it's, of course it's there. And it's always.
You know what? Sorry, I am reading it right now. The end of two says or, right? And then it goes to three, which says they have 20 pediatric experiences.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah. Okay, so there is an avenue.
I never thought we were mandating it.
So my suggestion would be to keep that same verbiage for the 1302 provider.
Dr. Lout.
Yeah, I just thought it might be easier if we add the new verbiage, 60 hours and 10 cases closer to the CODA section. Might be easier for the reader to view that. And, it might make things flow a little better.
It looks like if you read 3 under D, right? It says 20 pediatric cases over the last 2 years. So that it's either they did a residency or they had the 20 cases.
But we still have the 60 hours that we'll need to kind of scooch in there some way.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that makes sense. Did we cut the 60 down to 30, though?
I don't believe so. I think we kept it at 60.
Dr. Caputo.
Yeah, I think you guys need to revisit that. The discussion you were having at the time was about the number of cases, patient experiences a applicant should have. The hours always have said 30. And in one fell swoop, I think, in just kind of the discussion about the number of cases, it got thrown out there to go from 30 to 60. It's never been 60 hours. I actually think that's a pursuable issue for the board or to the board that the committee should give some thought to. But I think you're hard pressed to say that you're just going to double the amount of hours and increase patient experiences just with the stroke of a pen. I think if anything, you need to keep it at the 30 that it's always been at. And now include that additional requirement of patient cases, which you guys agreed to as 10. But the discussion never was about increasing the hours. It was just talking about patient cases.
I'd agree with that. I don't believe we increased the hours, in my recollection.
Well, I think the reason what we used is that document that's in our packet. It's towards the end. It's the model sedation and general anesthesia. Document that was supported by ASDA, AMOS, American Academy of Periodontology for a first-time applicant to provide moderate sedation on a pediatric patient. So I think a lot of our basis came from that document.
Well, and I'm looking right now in D, it says 20 cases, 15 hours. Right there on the screen, 20 cases, 15 hours. The 60 hours was to obtain the 1302 or the 1302 in the first place. right?
It's 1303.
No, we're in 1302 right now.
Oh, right.
1302 has always been 60 and 1303 has always been 30.
Well, I didn't know 1302 has been 60.
Yeah.
Keith, did you have a comment? Your hand was up and down.
I was going to say the exact same thing that Matt just pointed out.
Okay, so 1302 didactic hours should be 60. Is that right?
Yes.
Jessica, can you verify that?
That's hold on. We're talking two different things here. So it should be 60 to get the 1302 permit. Dr. Hugh, are you saying you're recommending it should be 60?
No. I'm not making a recommendation. We're talking about a lot of different.
Right. So the 60 hours that Dr. Caputo was talking about is for a 1302 just to obtain a 1302 permit. It has nothing to do with pediatric because we've never had a pediatric endorsement before. So we're speaking specifically now to a pediatric endorsement for 1303 permit holders to obtain that pediatric endorsement, as Dr. Nell just pointed out, it's 15 credit hours. So shouldn't the same apply to a 1302 provider if we want them to be able to be doing the same exact sedation that a 1303 provider is doing for those kids under 8?
It does. That's how it's written in 1302 right now.
Yeah, and that was my question, just a point of clarification.
Yeah, if you go back to section C3, it says 20 experiences, 15 hours. Of the 1302. Oh, yeah, D3. There you go.
I think the thing that you guys are not looking at is that this is for a renewal, right? It's not to obtain it in the – I see the language here is to obtain, but in the – where you're taking this language from in 1303 is for renewal. And so if you want them to – obtain it, then you have to look at similar. Again, this is why I just tell you, I think you should just have a statement in there that you can't see patients 8 years of age and younger, or however you want to put it, as a 1302 permit holder. As Heath said, they read this section. Well, just boom, put it right there up front that this permit level is for patients who are 8 and older, or however you want to delineate the age group, but just do it that way instead of getting caught up in all of this craziness. I understand there are other residency programs out there. I don't know where they are. They're not part of the CODA requirements. So what I'm trying to get folks to see is I'm not talking about the occasional program that may do this or may do that, but CODA does not have any pediatric requirements for AEGD. They may have some exposure requirements, but they don't have actual treatment requirements. And similarly, in these training programs, and as was mentioned, that some people get their 1302 training in their residency, those residencies are typically not seeing children. So I just think we need to be clear. Instead of looking at the exceptional situation, look at the more broad situation, because if you put this language in there, it opens it up to everybody, regardless of how they trained. So why not just put it in there as a blanket statement? And really, it's to the point you guys were making earlier. The reason why this was never an issue before is because you didn't have providers doing this. The folks that have 1302s are starting IVs on adult patients and moderately sedating them. They're not doing enteral pediatric sedation. And I think we're making it harder than we need to, or you guys are at least. Thanks.
Keith.
So the way where DESCA's screen is right now, it's a 1302 pediatric endorsement to obtain or renew. If you go to the section 1303, as Dr. Caputo was trying to talk about, it is also to obtain or renew. So there is the obtain component to it as well for the 1303. On the 1302, I think it's poorly written because it talks about needing, it says intravenous sedation, where if we are on D3, it says that they've completed intravenous moderate sedation. but we don't want them to do intravenous monitor sedation. We want them, those who have a pediatric endorsement, want them to do enteral monitor sedation. So I think it would be wise if we just copied what's in the 1303 pediatric endorsement and put it here in this language, because what if there was a 1302 provider that wanted to start seeing kids, still wanted to do adults? Are we saying that there's no avenue for them to go get the same training that a general dentist who doesn't have a 1302 permit and just wants to start seeing kids, they can go get the training and get a 1303 pediatric endorsement, but somehow I can't if I decide to do that, or I have to forego my 1302 permit just so I can have a 1303 pediatric endorsement? It just doesn't make sense to me. I think if we include it in the 1302, you outline exactly what it is. It's the same as the 1303 requirements. Then it allows that avenue if someone should take it, just like it does in the 1303.
Ryan, can you or Susie answer this question? Can a licensee hold two different sedation permits at the same time? Sherry?
No, they cannot.
Okay. So then I don't think we can. We have to allow for a pediatric endorsement in the 1302. If we just say 1302 permit holders can't sedate kids 8 years and younger with no option for a pediatric endorsement, they don't have the ability to get a 1303 with the pediatric endorsement. So, Heath, I think you're on the right track at that point. Matt.
So Heath, that's a really good point that you brought up about we want them doing enteral sedation. I think it'll be a really easy fix. If you look at D3, it does say, which I think is ridiculous, it says, has provided intravenous moderate sedation, deep sedation, or general anesthesia for 20 pediatric patients. That is like completely the opposite of what we want them to do. It should just say, has provided enteral moderate sedation for 20 pediatric patients. So that one sentence, just remove moderate, deep, and general and put enteral moderate sedation. I think it's fixed.
I also think you need to take out the, if the dentist completed a residency more than 2 years prior, because that's not following the same standard as the 1303.
Yeah. Yeah. D3 should be just really simple. They did 20 enteral moderate sedations on pediatric patients and 15 credit hours of continuing education in the areas of airway anatomy, physical evaluation, and so on.
Matt.
I think I lost you guys. Or we lost Heath.
Sorry. Can you go to 1303 D3? Which I know is the 1303. Thank you, Jessica. If you read that, to me, you should be able to just copy and paste that, because we're telling the 1302 provider, you can do what a 1303 you're telling the 1302 pediatric endorsed provider that they can do what a 1303 pediatric endorsed provider can do. So to me, the training should be the same between those two.
Yeah. We have the same problem there too, though. We say deep sedation and general anesthesia. So we just need to, I think you're right. Let's go to
just enteral moderate sedation and take out the deep sedation and general anesthesia.
Yeah. So let's go to 1303. Let's just have it read enteral moderate sedation. Then let's copy and paste it up into 1302 and be done.
I agree.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So what, if you're looking at the screen, what you see in the comment, this is the same language from D3 in 1303. This is what 1303 reads. And you're suggesting that we remove deep sedation and general anesthesia so that it just reads enteral moderate sedation. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So the dentist shall submit an affidavit to the board indicating that
that the dentist has provided enteral moderate sedation for 10 pediatric patients within 2 years immediately preceding the dentist's application. Yes?
Yes.
Okay.
And then the difference here is 10 patients versus 20 patients. So we just need to decide, are we going to go with 10 or are we going to go with 20?
And we don't care if the dentist has completed a residency or not.
That's correct.
I thought we had landed on 10 at a previous meeting.
I believe we landed on 10 as well, Dr. Hero, for the 1303, so I think that's what it should be for the 1302.
And Dr. Blazer gave a thumbs up as well, so let's have that be 10, Jessica.
Okay, hold on just a second. Okay, so we are still in 1302, but I think this is what you're looking for. Sorry, can you make it bigger? If that's good for 1302 and that's what you want for 1303, then I can just copy this and put it into 1303 as well.
Well, there's a bit of a typo, I think, maybe because you say cases completed with a dental practitioner who maintains a 1301 permit can count towards the 10 cases. So that means if they do, oh, okay, I'm sorry. So they do a pediatric procedure with a higher level permit that counts towards their 10. Is what you're saying. Okay.
So I have a question regarding the sentence D, to obtain or renew. Shouldn't this be to renew a pediatric endorsement?
I think it's for both, right?
Okay. Well, in this section, okay. I see what you're saying. I guess I'm looking at the 1303 where the requirements are a little different for obtain and renew.
And Jessica, we're missing the word sedation after moderate. Okay, I think we fixed it. We just need 1302 and 1303 to be the same. Do you guys think? Do you think we fixed it?
Yeah, I think so.
I think so.
We're getting some thumbs up too. Keith.
Sorry, I may be jumping the gun. Are we still? The very letter E I had a comment on, but I can hold until we're not done with this part.
No, I think we're good on D, unless okay. Someone has then another Jessica, comment.
I like the way this is written, what Dr. Arnell did with letter C, but because he did that, I think we need to consider adjusting E under the 1302, because if it's saying a 1302 permit holder cannot provide any anesthesia or sedation, so does that mean a 1302 provider can't give any, like can't even do anxiolysis or mild sedation with someone under 8? Is that the intent? And if so, I would question why, if it's just a general dentist that's been doing that forever, why they can't do any level of sedation. I think we clearly outlined in letter C now, with thanks to Dr. Arnell, that a 1302 provider cannot be doing moderate sedation under what they're written in C, but I don't know that it would be right to make restricting any type of sedation, including mild sedation.
Go ahead, Jessica.
So we mentioned in C, mind you, we're in 1302, that they cannot administer parenteral moderate sedation to a patient who is less than 8 years of age. It does not say anything about general anesthesia or sedation or deep sedation, anything like that. So when we get then to E, which I think is what you were talking about, it basically says, except as permitted according to C, which allows them to do enteral moderate sedation, they cannot provide any anesthesia or sedation services to a patient who is less than 8 years of age. So I guess my question is, similar to what was brought up, do we need E if C already covers it? And likewise, do we need to say anything about general or deep anesthesia and sedation?
I don't think we need to say anything about deep sedation and general anesthesia because that doesn't apply to 1302. That's beyond their scope anyways, so it doesn't need to be noted in here because they're not doing that. But I'm in favor of just getting rid of E at this point since we better clarified it in C.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
It says they can't even do nitrous probably, right?
Is right, exactly. Right.
Yeah, so I'd say get rid of that, yeah.
Well done. All right, so that brings us to a new E, which I don't have comments on, so I will just keep scrolling until someone stops me.
Jessica, I have comments under H. I think it's written for a 1301 permit holder, and we just need the original H, which might be G now. I think it was the original H. It references generally anesthesia and deep sedation a couple times. And with us being in the 1302 section, we probably need to modify that.
So before we get there, we are still in 1302.
Right.
And I have a question because we are getting rid of 1306. This section here references 1306. So, do we need to just get rid of this section completely because we are getting rid of 1306 and the requirements of 1306 have already been handled in other sections?
I saw that too, Jessica, and I would, those renewal, so this is for a site visit, and those renewal applicants, those records supporting continued competency, it would be what we've put in letter I of 1302.
So what I'm hearing is get rid of this, get rid of S.
I don't know that you can get rid of it, but instead of R411-1306, you would just put in section I or section 1304, or sorry, section 1302I.
Does anybody disagree?
At least it was I before we started changing everything. So that may change when other things, but it's where we put the new renewal requirements for the 1302 permit. And I have one other thing in that same section, just section 3 there. It'd be 3E. Again, it goes to, it references R411-1306. So I think we need to remove that. And I'm not sure what should be rewritten, but it's basically saying if this is a Category 3 failure on the evaluation, then the applicant must complete recognize continuing dental education with the subject matter identified by the evaluators or identified by the board. I would recommend identified by the evaluators, but I don't think it should reference 111306.
I would agree with that.
Again, I'll just keep scrolling until I have a comment or someone stops me.
So it's I is my comment, Jessica, from before. It references CE and general anesthesia and a couple times in A and F. So I didn't know if we wanted to alter that. Heath, go ahead.
Question about that. It doesn't really matter to me, but I'm just thinking, like if I go to the ADSA course in Vegas, let's say it's the main one that I go to for a lot of this CE, there may be a general anesthesia course that I pop into as part of those requirements because I like the subject matter. It's not specifically regarding general anesthesia, but it might be, in my opinion, better for medical emergencies or something. So I don't, do you, if you take that away, is it okay? Just the fact that I signed up for the parenteral sedation one rather than the general anesthesia course that's fine. I'm splitting hairs here. I just don't want to be too restrictive.
Yeah, and the same thing was crossing my mind because I think a general anesthesia course, or deep sedation course should be able to count towards CE for the moderate sedation permit holder. I just want to make sure we're not saying it has to be to that level.
Yeah, agreed. Totally agree with that. Yeah.
So it's probably okay the way it's written. So I think you can move on, Jessica.
Well, there is one in that what you caught, Anthony, number 2. It says complete at least 10 general anesthesia or deep sedation cases. That should be.
Yeah, I saw that in our packet, but on screen it looked different.
Oh, yeah, it is different on there. Yeah, you're right. But in our packet, what you have in our packet, that's what I have in my packet too. So, okay.
So I have a comment here that says, make sure this is indicated. Make sure this is included in 1301 and 1304. 1301 says the section 1301 permit holder for intravenous access shall use a new infusion set, including a new infusion line and new bag of fluid for each patient.
So we
Go ahead, Dr. Nell.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, it should be the same as what's on the screen in J for all the different. That's what Dr. Arnell clarified last time.
Dr. Caputo. Dr. Caputo.
Sorry. Do you want to say sedation services in that line instead of anesthesia services? I think you just want sedation services because it's a 1302 permit. So they're not doing anesthesia. What's the point? Thanks.
This might be, that's a good catch, Dr. Caputo. And just for Jessica's standpoint, your note, make sure all sections using this language use language in J. So that's going to change a little bit now because a 1301 will be using anesthesia and sedation services as well as a 1304 potentially.
So the next comment or question that I had, excuse me, relates to subsection K. We had added as necessary. The question that I had was, should this also be added to 1301, 1303, and 1304?
I don't see anything wrong with that.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say.
Okay. again, similar question. There was added language in subsection M. The section 1302 permit holder shall establish written guidelines for discharging a patient. Should this requirement also be added to 1303 and 1304?
It is. We have different language, I believe. We call it discharge criteria. So I think it is already in 1301. But I think it's called discharge criteria or something like that. I remember we added that at the request of Dr. Germain. Yeah, there you go. Criteria for discharge using recognized pediatric discharge scoring system. That's for the pediatric endorsement. I thought we also put it in for just the general administration of anesthesia for adults as well.
It's letter K under 1301.
Thanks, Heath. I might suggest we copy the language here and put it in the area you had the question, Jessica.
I think it's the exact same.
Written guidelines. It does say not instructions. I don't like instructions. I like guidelines. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's the same in 1301 and 1302.
Okay, perfect. Yeah.
Similar question. Has this been drafted in 1301, 1303, and 1304? Or does it need to be?
I don't know if it specifically says it, but it's certainly a good practice.
It does say it does say the exact same thing in 1301, right under K, just like it's located here under M. But I don't know about 1303 and 1304, but it should be included if it's not, in my opinion.
Yeah. At 1304, it's more of that the dentist will ensure that another anesthetic isn't started until the other patient's been recovered.
Yeah.
The 1304 is not providing the anesthesia. The anesthesia provider is.
So I think, Jessica, on what you now listed as P, that might need to be evaluated because it's saying, I believe, that the pediatric permit holder is administering parenteral moderate sedation, but we just outlined that they aren't able to administer parenteral moderate sedation.
So, if I'm not mistaken, should P just go away altogether? Or do we still want it to list these things, just not for parenteral, just enteral?
My vote would be let's look at 1303, and if this is in 1303, then we can have a discussion whether we need it or not. If it's not in 1303, then we should remove it because the 1302 pediatric provider is doing what a 1303 pediatric provider is doing. I think that was more or less copied from a 1301. So mm-hmm. I'm in favor of removing it because we're not doing deep sedation general anesthesia. We're doing moderate control sedation, but I don't want to speak for everyone.
Yeah, I think that was copied, and you're right.
So I do think it does need to be the same standard as the 1303, though.
Yes, I agree.
There is here, it's defining who needs to be in the room and so on. And that, I believe, is part of 1303. So we need before it's just deleted completely, we should probably pull it from 1303.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
I'm not sure you have anything in 1303.
I don't see it, Dr. Arnell, and anything like that in 1303.
Okay. Well,
what should it say for 1302 and 1303? What should it say?
If you go back to the section we're talking about, first we need to change that in that first sentence, parenteral needs to change to enteral. And then I think the rest is exactly how we decided it should be, right?
Is this when it says the following additional persons, does that mean in addition to the anesthesia provider, the sedation provider?
So I take that as the anesthesia provider, a DA or a CRNA, they have the PALs. And then your additional person has, BLS, ACLS is what I was reading that or anticipating.
So now this is different. So in 1301, because the 1302 provider who's doing this is the operator also, right? They're doing operator anesthetist. In 1301, we define what needs to be there in an operator anesthetist model. Versus a dedicated anesthesia provider model. So because this is an operator anesthetist model, it should mirror the language intended for the operator anesthetist. And I'm looking here to see if that is the case. Let's see. No, I don't believe it is. So if you go up to 1301 in this section, it has two parts. It says if the person providing the anesthesia is also doing the sedation, then this is what you need in the room, right?
Under letter P, is that where you're looking, Dr. Arnell?
In
1301?
Let's see.
It should be highlighted on your screen. If the section 1301 permit holder who also administers general anesthesia or deep sedation to a patient is the operating nurse, section 1301 permit holder shall ensure.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So qualified the non-dentist anesthesia providers. If you just scroll up a little bit, it is separate. So you're right, Dr. Arnell. This is the CCO. That's regarding.
Yeah.
Having a dedicated anesthesia provider. So you're right. You're spot on that. Q is talking about the single operator.
Yes. So if we scroll down, let's see. It defines who need. Well, let's see. We just lost it on the screen.
I think it's two different things. We're confusing pediatric with non-pediatric. In 1301, letter O and P, that is not referencing a pediatric endorsement. I don't see pediatric endorsement anywhere on there. It just says a 1301 permit holder. If they're the operating dentist, then they need to ensure that these people are in there, which PALS, if the patient's less than 8, or ACLS. But it's not specific to the pediatric endorsement. Letter Q is specific to the pediatric endorsement, and that mimics, I think verbatim, what the section is in 1302 that we're talking about.
Okay, I got you, Heath. Yeah, I see what you mean. Okay, so then the question is for section 1303 and 1302, do we want to include a standard of who needs to be in the room just like we did for 1301?
Correct.
And then since there's two standards in 1301, one being the operator anesthetist and one being a separate operator, separate anesthetist, then you know, we need to pick which one and put it in there. I would say because a 1302 and a 1303 provider with a pediatric endorsement is going to be the operator anesthetist, we need to write it assuming that they're doing both, right?
So then you would suggest that it would be under additional persons would be beyond the person that's doing the sedation and the procedure.
Yeah, I would say in that situation, they have to have, just like it says in 1301, they have to have someone whose essentially sole purpose is to monitor the patient during the procedure.
But are you talking just for pediatric patients?
Yeah, isn't that what we're talking about?
Here it is, but it's not written that way in 1301. Says they shall ensure there's a person present with the patient during the procedure whose primary responsibility is to monitor the patient during the procedure and has PALS if the patient's less than 8 or has a current ACLS. So if Dr. Blazek is doing the anesthesia operator method, he needs to make sure he has someone else in the room that has PALS if the patient's less than 8 or has ACLS.
No, I thought, yeah, or ACLS, correct. Yeah,
yeah,
that's what
yeah.
I understood it as. Right.
So, yeah, I guess you're right. The next section actually does the pediatric endorsement specific section.
Right.
It does address, I think, what we're looking for, right?
Yes. So I would say we just need to include that in 1303.
Yep.
So I would say what's in 1302, the section that we're at on 1302, let me go back down to it. 1302, I don't know what the letter is now. That's still 1301. Yeah, go down 1302, Jessica. We just want to copy and paste that. Keep going a little more. 1302P, yeah. Right there.
Can we just read it briefly before we're copying and pasting?
Yeah.
To make sure it says what we want it to say.
No, Jessica, I don't think what you have highlighted there in your comment section is what we want it to say, because that's just for a operator anesthetist model. We're just speaking specifically to a pediatric endorsement.
Yeah, what you want to highlight is the paragraph right next to it.
Yes, that one. That's what we want to, yeah. You can delete the comment.
Yeah. Okay. So that section P is what we want to copy and paste, except in 1303, it's going to say 1303 instead of 1302.
Yeah.
Okay. So now we put that in 1303 and we should be good there.
Yeah.
So just for discussion, we're all okay that even though it's just a 1303 permit holder, we want them to have PALS or ACLS, right? They can do either or. As opposed to a 1301 permit holder like myself, like you said, Dr. Snell, I must have PALS.
Well, I think this is – the way I read this is it's the following additional. So a section 1303 permit holder who has obtained a pediatric endorsement according to subsection C, you probably need to change that C, but, and who administers enteral moderate sedation to a pediatric patient shall ensure the following additional persons are present with the patient. So the way I read this, we're saying that the permit holder, is needing additional people that meet these requirements, not myself as the permit holder. I'm taking myself out of this. So my dental assistant or my whoever, you know, and my nurse, whoever I designate, I have to have one person who has PALS or ACLS and another person who has BLS.
Got it. But the permit holder, they don't necessarily, for 1303, they don't necessarily have to have PALS, do they?
If they're going to do pediatrics, they do, just to get the permit. Yeah.
Got it. I like it. All right.
Yeah, I think this is good.
To answer your question, Jessica, there, I don't think that applies to 1303 and 1304 because you don't get, I mean, I guess for 1304, it wouldn't apply. You could use the same verbiage in the 1303 section for a 1304 permit because it's just going, a 1301 can do 02, 03, 04, a 1302 could do 03 and 04. So it's just doing the subsequent ones below it.
Yeah, I don't think we need that in 1303.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So looking at subsection Q for 1302, do we not need it at all for 1302?
I think for 1302 we do, because we have it in there for 1301 that says something like, except as according to subsection whatever, a section 1301 permit holder may also administer parenteral moderate sedation. It's basically just saying that the permit holder that holds the more superior permit can do what's below it.
Yeah.
Correct. So it sounds like it's appropriate for 1302, and it should be in 1303, but we don't need it in 1304.
We don't need it in 1303 yeah. because there's no permit below the 1303.
Right.
Got it. Okay.
Can I stop right there on R?
Mm-hmm.
I think this was just copied and pasted as Jessica's trying to maneuver all of these pieces and verbiage and stuff. I don't know that this is intended for a 1302 provider that we need to have for moderate sedation, someone extra in the room that either has PALS or ACLS. This is not for pediatrics. This is just in general. So I think it just got copied and pasted from 1301. It even says who administers general anesthesia or deep sedation.
Okay, so this actually addresses the operator anesthetist issue, right? You're right. It was obviously copy and pasted from 1301, but the spirit of this is, do we want to require 1302 permit holders to have someone else in the room?
I think it's good practice to them not be the only person in the room, but I don't think we need to require PALS or ACLS by that second person. We already have earlier in the section that you're required to have someone that has BLS with you in there, but not ACLS or PALS, and I don't think that's needed for moderate sedation.
Okay, so it does say somebody needs to be in the room for the sedation who has BLS other than the operator anesthetist.
Yes, and when we renew, we need to submit those BLS cards for those people.
Okay.
So I would vote just to delete that section.
Can we see where it says it in the previous section, Heath? Do you know off the top of your head where we can roll to just to double check?
I think it's right at the top of the screen, maybe, if you scroll up just half an inch.
This is Christensen. Are you looking to strike R completely?
Pediatric endorsement, sorry.
Were we looking to strike R completely then from here?
That was the thought process.
But we do need to confirm that it does say in there somewhere that there needs to be at least somebody else with BLS.
Yeah, I'm looking for that right now. Give me 2 seconds. Says maintains a stat. This is in 1302B. 2B maintains a staff of supervised personnel capable of handling procedures, complications, and emergency incidents, including at least one staff member who holds a current course completion confirmation in basic life support healthcare provider level endorsed by the American Heart Association, is present during the parenteral moderate sedation procedure to monitor appropriate physiological parameters and to assist in any supportive or resuscitation measures.
Yep. I like that. So Heath, in your mind for 1302, it's just you and then the person assisting you, or is it a third person like we kind of typically have as 1301 in my operator anesthetist or team model?
Yeah, I have two dental assistants, but I have two, one's doing the assisting, one's doing the monitoring, like that's
right.
Dedicated to them, but okay. I don't think that's outlined here, nor do I think that should be outlined. I think what the way it's been written and the way it's been forever is you need to have a supervised personnel that has BLS and that is there to, during the parenteral moderate sedation to monitor appropriate physiological parameters.
I'm for striking section R And I think the way it's written currently in that section B looks really good. Although, like you do, Heath, I think it's good practice to have that one person dedicated to monitoring the patient and then one person dedicated to suctioning spit and blood.
I don't disagree. It's good practice. I just don't think it need to regulate that and rule, but my opinion.
So what I'm hearing is we're getting rid of that subsection R and everybody's okay?
Yep, lots of thumbs up.
I like the thumbs up. All right, I'm going to keep scrolling. We are now in 1303. I have a comment here. Remove this language and make a new section applicable to all dental professionals who are not permitted for anesthesia to allow incremental dosing up to maximum.
I would agree with that. I didn't write that, but I didn't even see that comment, but I like that because especially since we switched this to the depth of sedation, the original verbiage talks about minimal sedation. So I think we should do something like this. I think it's a good suggestion of if the intent is to, what this says is basically, hey, someone who doesn't have a 1303 but wants to do minimal sedation, here's how you can do that per the rule. You can't give a dose that's larger than the maximum recommended dose that's approved for labeling for unmonitored use. And as Dr. Caputo brought up before, we don't want to just say, hey, throw a mega dose at them. So we include these other things that say, why don't you start with a smaller dose, but you can't go past 1.5 times over the course of the procedure. So I like what's here. I like the intent, but I don't think it fits in this section. I think it's very confusing to a 1303 provider to come and read this.
Dr. Lau.
Yeah, I just recommend deleting that sentence.
Yeah, I'm for deleting it too, I think. I don't know if Dr. Caputo's still on. I think he has good insight to this. I like the way it's written below under two, that like the small two. Yeah, I like that. As opposed to the one, almost would maybe give a false sense of, approval to like just keep giving it until you hit the right dose.
Ali.
I'm just going to suggest, what if instead of having it here at the beginning of this section where it could create some confusion, like Heath mentioned, what if it just goes at the very end, just as kind of like a, clarify that if you're only doing this, you don't require the permit. Because I don't think it should be deleted. I think, unless the intent is to make it so people can't do this anymore, but I agree having it right at the top of the section can be a little bit confusing as opposed to just putting it at the end as kind of like a footnote. Like you don't need to do all this if this is all you're doing.
Dr. Puto.
First of all, I applaud all of you for giving all this credit to dentists, but let's just be very clear. Nobody reads these rules, okay? And particularly no one that doesn't need a permit. So it doesn't really matter where you put this. Most folks don't understand this language anyway. And I'll tell you where most dentists get confused is whether they can administer nitrous oxide oxygen as well as give a dose of drug, which they can. So I'm all for trying to clean up this language. The intent was, so again, you have to just go back historically, right? So before 2013, it basically said a dentist could give a dose of drug and only give one more additional dose, not to exceed the maximum dose. And that's where this idea of incremental dosing came in, because some dentists said, well, maybe 0.25 is not enough. And if I can't give enough, I might as well just go to the highest dose the first time. So it just got confusing. So I think the easier thing here is, and most people don't appreciate this, when you're dosing for oral sedation, and it's something that we teach to the dentists that are going through this training, you're waiting at least 30 to 45 minutes for onset of that drug. So you really don't have the time to do multiple dosing anyway, because pretty much your appointment's going to go away by virtue of doing multiple dosing. So I think maybe if you want to try to organize language in stating something to the effect of the lowest initial dose should always be considered, and one supplemental dose can be administered not to exceed the maximum dose of that drug. Something like that, I think, is going to be easier, and it gets the point across. But we really don't teach this approach any other way. And so what we tell anybody that's looking to get training in oral sedation is, if you want to do multiple drugs, or if you want to do dosing beyond the maximum recommended dose, get your permit, because that's just the easiest way to handle it. Otherwise, you're kind of restricted to giving a dose, one dose at least some amount less than the maximum, but you can't exceed the maximum. So it's hard to do this. It's very hard to put into regulatory language, and I think that's why it looks so clumsy. But that's sort of the intent.
I appreciate those comments by Dr. Caputo, and that's kind of along the lines that I was thinking of. So the 1303 permit, all these permits are giving permission to those who have that permit to be able to do a certain level of sedation. If we're saying that the lowest level of sedation that you need a permit for is enteral sedation, by looking at that as a general dentist, I would assume that I can do mild sedation without needing a permit. So do you have to put it in rule that here's what you can do to do mild sedation? Because if not, I can't do moderate sedation because I need a permit for that. But there's no permit that says that I need to be able to do mild sedation. So then if we want to put that in rule, then I would say we're very specific about the administration of a single drug, like Anthony said, not to exceed the FDA maximum recommended dose. And that can be combined with nitrous, just those two things, period. That's it. That's all you can do if you don't have a sedation permit, or just by deducing that I don't want to do moderate sedation, therefore I don't need a permit and I can do mild sedation. We just leave it up to the dentist to decide what that looks like.
Randy.
I appreciate those comments, and I guess the interesting thing is we have to look at ourselves as what is our responsibility here, protecting the public or giving the dentist an opportunity to do anesthesia. And the other comment I had was, which I have seen happen in my building, the dentist gives one dose to the patient at home, and then they get to the office and they give them a second dose. And, so is that really only giving them one dose? I know I didn't give any answers to the topic here, but those are where my thoughts go on this concept.
Heath.
So maybe just help move things forward. Can I just propose that somewhere else other than this section, we write something that just says to the effect, licensed dentist is able to provide a single dose of a single drug limited to the maximum recommended dose of as printed in FDA approved labeling for unmonitored home use. And then letter C, nitrous oxide oxygen may be administered in addition as long as the combination does not exceed minimal sedation, not moderate sedation.
Yeah, I like that language. What do you guys think about putting it, if that's letter A, and then B gets into the specifics of the 1303? I know this is, somebody mentioned earlier, this is what a lot of licensed dentists don't understand and kind of seek information on. So I think if it was right at the beginning, very clear, it could help. Dr. Lau.
Sorry. I may be the odd guy out, but I think it reads pretty well right now. I don't know if I would recommend modifying it at all. I think it makes the point and is pretty inclusive and expressive of everything. I think this is, I'd leave it alone.
Heath.
At a minimum, we need to change it back to minimal sedation and not enteral moderate, because you're defeating the whole purpose of getting the permit if you allow them to do enteral moderate the way it's currently written with the blue language in there.
I agree with that.
And it gives them a false sense of like how deep they can go with really no training.
I agree with that. Anthony, I like your suggestion. You just put it as letter A and just say any licensed dentist is able to administer a single drug not exceeding the printed FDA approved labeling for unmonitored home use, period. And then nitrous oxide could be combined with that single administration of that drug, or however you want to say it. I like that idea.
Yeah.
It sounds like we've got some consensus, Jessica, if you want to do that.
And just as an aside, I mean, I'll tell you, that's the single most common question I get from general dentists wanting to do something. You know, what am I allowed to do? They'll ask that quite often.
I 100% agree with that when it comes to sedation. And and I think the verbiage that's written in here, that has been written in here, is confusing enough that they start questioning, like, wait, what can I do? Like, it's not clear enough and concise enough to give them. It's like I could point them to this, but then when they read it, they still don't really know what they can or can't do.
I've heard permit holders misexplain this and tell general dentists you have to have a permit if you're going to combine nitrous with even a single oral sedative. So, you know, I think making it as clear and concise and right at the beginning is hopefully going to be helpful.
Sorry, guys, I'm trying to follow. So we don't need two at all?
Jessica, I wouldn't delete it yet. I would say if you just make a new letter A for right now, and then we can type out the verbiage and then go back and strike that, because some of the verbiage we can take from what's there. That'd be my suggestion, please.
So tell me what you want it to say.
I would put any licensed dentist may administer.
Okay, I'm sorry. Sorry to interrupt you, but okay, so the current A says before administering enteral moderate sedation in a dental office or dental clinic, a dentist shall possess a Section 1303 permit issued by the board. That's still accurate, right?
Yes, so I'd make that letter B. I think that's what Dr. Caputo was suggesting that I like. That's what I interpreted, at least.
Dr. Blazek just put some verbiage in the messenger.
Yeah.
That's what I tried to say, but my microphone was off.
This is Christensen. What if we just put it as a non-permit holders?
Yeah, that's better.
That's a good idea. Yeah, I like that, Eddie, too. Yep.
So, Jessica, instead of a general dentist, just you could change it to any licensee. Or a non-permit holder.
So then what are you regulating?
Yeah, I've put a licensed dentist.
Okay.
Because you're regulating all dentists who have a license at that point.
But what if we put it in a category that just said non-permit holders? I don't know. I'm just thinking of something like Dr. Caputo went on to say that nobody reads this, but if they can find something quickly that says, hey, what can I actually do? I don't hold any permits. Where do I find that at? Just a suggestion.
This is probably the best place you're going to put it. I just think it gets really hard, but I do think you want to – you don't want to say they can just administer a single dose of a single medication, because that's what we said prior to 2013. And that's what I was saying earlier. That's when you had the folks just going right to 0.5 when they had a patient that could tolerate 0.25. So, I mean, I don't want to get bogged down in this. I think you guys are going to have to do another read on this. I'm happy to work with Jessica on the language a little bit if the committee is okay with that, but we can come up with language I think you guys will be happy with that gets the intent of what you're looking for. But I'll defer to you, Dr. Hero.
Well, and I appreciate that, Anthony. My concern is we got to, Ryan can speak to this, but we got to really wrap this up tonight.
Right, but if you just say I'll give you the license to work on the language, someone has to read this in its finality. Correct?
Yeah, I mean, it'll go to Bodex.
Well, if you guys are fine with me working on that, I'm just trying to save you some time.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah, I like that, Anthony, but Dr. Caputo, but Dr. Hero, is there a chance that even us, we're going to get like at least one read before it goes to Bodex? What's the date you want to send it to Bodex? Is it early September?
Ryan, do you want to speak to this?
Yeah, so because of that statute that passed, the bill to pass 1602, and the board's meeting is August 18th, which is a week from today. That's it. I mean, today is literally probably your last stab at this, unless this committee decides together collectively before you adjourn today to meet again Monday through Thursday next week, which could include an evening if you wanted to do that, but you're not going to have any more stabs at it.
I think it would be nice to, I mean, hopefully we get it really close to done and then everybody can read it and just say, hey, last ditch, here's something I saw, here's something you saw, you know, and just, I was going to suggest that anyway also.
How about Thursday at like 4:00? Just to start the discussion on that time. So we got a thumbs up from Dr. Blazek. I can do it.
This is like every other meeting. It has to have a quorum. Do we have to have the 1 week notice, all that kind of stuff?
Do we need a week notice, Ryan?
24 hours.
Okay. Dr. Lout.
I can do it at 5.
Okay. So Thursday at 5, I see Dr. Arnell, Ali, Randy, Dr. Lout, myself. We get one more commitment, Dr. Christensen. All right, great. Why don't we, Ryan, you want to schedule that Thursday the 17th at 5 p.m.?
Yeah, we can take care of it.
So then, Dr. Caputo, yeah, if you want
to. Let me work on this right now. I'll send something over to you, Anthony, or Ryan, and you can get it to Jessica, or whatever, and then the group can look at it. That way, I'll help you out here.
Great, appreciate it.
So, if we're not going to make any major changes to the section at this time, I will continue to scroll. You guys stop me when you have an issue. Okay, so, excuse me, I had a comment here relating to provide affidavit confirming completion of PALS coursework within the 2 years prior to submitting the permit application if the Section 1303 permit holder is treating patients less than 8 years of age. I had a comment here that 1302 states in order to renew Section 1302 permit, provide confirmation of completing recognized continuing education for human simulation involving crises management within 5 years prior to submitting the renewal permit application.
if you're asking, should the 1303 mimic the 1302? I don't think it should. It's a different type of an anesthetic. I think the crisis management requirement for a 1303 is probably not as stringent, if that's the question.
It is.
I've deferred to others' thoughts.
I agree with Dr. Blazek.
It's funny. I find myself in the situation that I never thought I would be more stringent. Actually, I guess I prefer to go less stringent on the 1302. To me, I just don't see how, and I think we talked about this last time, and Dr. Brady's not here, so I don't want to speak for him, but I think he echoed the same thought. If we're permitting individuals to a sedation level, which is moderate sedation, I know it's different. I know it's easier to provide the sedation, but the potential emergencies all come based on the level of sedation. So why would we have different levels of requirements for the crisis management between those two permit providers?
I think they're pretty similar, actually, reading this, Heath.
So I would either add in what Jessica's comment there. You're right, Dr. Lapp. They are very similar. The specific comment here is, should 1303 need the recognized continuing education for human simulation involving crisis management? And if the board or the committee members last time, I brought up, why would we require ACLS and other stuff for 1303? Because they don't even know how to start IVs. But there was discussion, I think Dr. Brady was the main one chiming in, commenting on, if they're doing moderate sedation, the crisis management should be the same, because it's the level of sedation that produces the potential crises, not necessarily the administration of how that's given. So I would either say strike the human simulation from 1302, which I'm okay with it there, but I would just say I would be consistent between 02 and 03 because the level of sedation is the same.
Could I suggest we remove that from both 1302 and 1303?
And I'm fine with that.
No, I'd rather add it 1303. To me, it's not a deal breaker, but I'd rather go. I would rather have, if that's the way you feel, Dr. Snell, I would support both in doing it. Because I see a 1302 permit having the potential to go into an anesthetic level or a crisis that is much greater than you might expect. So my initial thought was that the 1303 permit is not as deep as a 1302 potentially could be, but overdose, that's what would happen there. So I would say keep it in both then, if that's the way we all can agree.
Yeah, and to kind of echo that, I've seen multiple adverse occurrences since I've been on the board with 1302 permit holders really exceeding the amount and the dosage of sedatives are administering. So I can appreciate that they're both moderate sedation, but I think the reality is we're seeing more adverse occurrences out of 1302 than 1303 permit holders. Dr. Arnell, before I call on you, Ryan had a suggestion that maybe we can meet Wednesday night instead of Thursday night. Bodex is going to have to approve this, and if we meet Thursday night, the board's not going to have time to review it for the Friday meeting. So if Wednesday night at 5 o'clock would work for everybody, that's probably going to be better.
And if I can jump in, maybe Jessica, are you going to be, can you be available for one last hurrah?
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we can now, yeah.
So sorry. I probably can. I hate to commit to one or the other at the moment because, again, I am suffering severe technological difficulties and my calendar is down. But I mean, if it's something that's at like 4 or 5 o'clock, usually that's not an issue for me.
Let's do this. Let's kind of pencil in Wednesday at 5. And Jessica, when you can confirm that, please do so with Ryan. And if it does not work then perhaps the we can push it, the anesthesia and sedation committee meeting back, and then hold a special board meeting that last week of August to just review this.
And when you say Wednesday, can you give me a date?
August 16th at 5 p.m.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That actually works better for me. Not that I'm a deciding factor, but that does work better for me Wednesday.
Great.
Thank God.
Ryan, as we're jumping around, part of my reluctance in voting on the letter to the nursing board was legal advice that we've heard in the past about not being able to basically do that. Can we get an opinion from Seamus or Rob prior to this final meeting? And then if they're okay with it, we can vote and move that along.
I'll just say yes for Rob or Seamus. We'll just pass it on.
Okay. Randy?
Well, the only thing I was actually going to make a motion that we support the letter, but out of respect for what you want to try to do, I'll hold off on that. So,
well, and, frankly, we can. I mean, that was my thought process in not motioning for that, but I suppose we can motion to support it, and then we can just deal with it at a board level of if this is something we can pursue or not. So just, let's deviate real quick. I'll make a motion for the committee to support the letter to the CRNA, to the nursing board.
I second the motion. Blazek.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 I haven't read the letter, so I'm going to abstain because I don't know what it says.
Okay. Any opposed? So motion passes, one abstained. And then, Ryan, what we can do is that can move along to the board, and prior to that agendized meeting, whenever this item is agendized, prior to that meeting, let's get an opinion from Rob or Seamus on it. Thank you. Okay, sorry about the deviation there. I think, Matt, you had your hand up.
I completely forget what I was going to say. It'll come back to me. I did feel that it was important, but.
Okay. Then Jessica, why don't you take it back over?
Sure. So we are still at number 7. I think I can delete the comment, but the question is whether or not you still need the number 7 in the 1303.
Did we forego the human simulation, which was the previous question?
Matt?
Actually, that's what I was going to say. I do feel the human simulation is critical for 1302. I don't feel that it's critical for 1303.
There's... I mean, these human sim courses are readily available. Is that right, Matt, or anybody else?
Yeah, there's lots of places you can do this.
Okay, we always want to be cognizant of that if we're going to acquire it. Yeah, Dr. Caputo.
Thanks. So the only comment I have is, and I know it was mentioned that we're talking about level, but we're also talking about age of patient. And I think that's important too. So if we're talking about a pediatric population that has no IV access, I don't know what that dentist is going to gain from a human simulation program. In fact, I don't even know if any exist that would provide crisis management in that type of situation. I think usually you're looking at, not just airway management, but IV access, because you're getting into cardiopulmonary interventions. So I struggled with this as we had reported previously on some of the courses that are out there, but these courses are pretty specific to pediatrics in their training, but but I don't know about emergency courses that are specific for this type of patient population. I just think you guys want to be thoughtful about that.
Keith.
So, yeah, I agree with that. I don't think, at least I wasn't inferring that this is just for pediatric cases, because in the 1302, it's not specific to pediatric. It's generally speaking for a 1302 permit holder. But, you know, honestly, just in the sense of moving on, it sounds like most people don't want it for the 1303. It's not that important to me, so I say we just move on.
So the consensus is to include it for the 1302, but not the 1303. Is that correct?
That's what it sounds like to me. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm seeing thumbs up. Jessica, do you have that?
So am I hearing that we don't need number 7 at all?
No, I think number 7 is completely different than what we were. You had 6 highlighted with a comment before, Jessica, before we kind of went to a different topic. So we can now address number 7 with your question.
I think the issue was, Jessica, there's no human simulation requirement for 1303.
So is number 7 still good the way that it's written?
I think it is. It's consistent with the other permits.
We're getting thumbs up, so I think you can move on.
And again,
my only question is, why is 7 in front of C? Isn't C where you start talking about the pediatric endorsement?
So one of my comments and questions was move this to the pediatric section.
Yep. I think that's what you want to do.
And that's fine.
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that, Jessica.
Yeah, that's where it should be.
Isn't that already written in letter D?
Well, that's what it, so then it also says in letter D to obtain or renew.
Yeah, I don't even think you need 7.
So as long, well, I'd keep 7 until you look at D and are comfortable with in D.
Yeah, we got some redundancy, I think, is what's going on.
I think D 3 says almost identical to what's in 7. And that talks about obtaining and renewing. I personally am okay with what's in 3 right there that's highlighted in place of 7.
I know you're doing a bunch of things, but I just want to look at your 3 again.
You're getting a lot of thumbs up too, Jessica.
Thanks, guys.
Dennis shall submit in order to, okay. All right. The only thing that doesn't seem right to me is go down to your, if we're just on 3, that's fine. I don't want to get too far ahead. But 4, it says initial applicants shall meet the requirements as indicated and complete at least 3 clinical cases with pediatric patients. Well, aren't we talking about pediatric patients? Isn't that what it is already? I mean, do you need to say that, I guess? I'm just kind of, like at the 10,
I don't know. Right above it we say 10, and then right below it we say 3. I think we could probably erase 4.
Yeah, maybe that's just not
10, isn't the intent, 10 is for renewal, but if they're doing an initial, you want them to have some number of cases, and it used to be a lot more than three, and we brought it down to three for that initial one. That's where that came from.
But why did we do that? I've always, like, that discussion didn't make any sense to me. That
no, I think we actually deleted it last meeting. And we went up to 10 later, further down.
Well, that's why it's, I think the challenge of this section is to obtain or renew, which I know mirrors language and other, but.
I would probably just delete that number four.
I agree.
What does your comment say, Jessica? Does this prevent a new dentist?
Yes. So the comment says, does this prevent a new dentist from obtaining the permit if they cannot get the number of cases needed? And then Dr. Caputo had comments. Yep. And those are all Dr. Caputo's comments.
I mean, the committee agreed that they need to do these cases. So to your point, if they didn't do those cases, then yes, they would not be able to. So if they made application, Susie would inform them that it's not complete. But usually, I mean, what they get is pretty clear in what they have to do. So they would, it would be understood that the case completion is what it is. But yep, they didn't have it, they would not be in compliance.
Fair enough. So I have deleted that comment, and I will continue to scroll until someone stops me.
Go back up a little bit, just to the initial applicants. So to me, this seems contradictory because above it says 2 years, and now this one says 3 years. And I don't know, that's weird. I don't know if anybody else saw that.
Heath.
Hey, so the one above is for pediatrics, specific pediatrics. Letter, the one below.
Oh, this is starting for B just a regular. Gen-
yes, fair enough. Correct.
Okay, all right. Very fast scrolling. Hey, right there.
That's real loud.
Yeah, there's a section that we voted on, not last meeting, but the meeting before, regarding 60 hours in continuing education, 10 cases for the initial applicant. I don't see it here. I may not be looking in the right section, but. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was wondering the same thing, Dr. Lout. And if you go back up, Jessica, I think it says 30 hours.
It says 15.
No, if you go back up to letter E, 1, initial applicants shall meet one of the following conditions, provide written affidavits successfully completing 30 hours. And then in
and the pediatric endorsement is 15.
No, I think we initial applicants, I think we had 60 for are we still at 1303 or are we just starting pediatric?
Well, that's what I'm saying. That
this is 1303E.
Yeah, but you want to – E says – so you're saying that initial applicant applies to anybody applying for a 1303.
Correct.
Correct.
They have to do 30 hours.
And that's not a CODA – if it's not a CODA approved –
No, I understand. But then go up to the pediatric endorsement on page 22 right here. It says to obtain a pediatric endorsement, the dentist shall have an affidavit including blah, 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 10 patients with, doesn't it say 15 hours or am I not reading that right? It says 15 CE.
in D3.
Right. So you're saying that 15 hours is beyond the 30 hours.
Yeah, and it's specific
to... The 15 I thought was for renewal.
Well, the beginning part, again, says to obtain or renew.
Yep. Okay.
So what you guys are saying, and this is where, again, I'm just offering you some consideration. The people that are getting the pediatric endorsement aren't training to see adults. So those courses are specifically geared towards the pediatric patient. What you did effectively in the 1302 is you said the 1302 person only has to do D3, right, which is the 15 hours. But you're saying if a person doesn't have a 1302 and they want to get a 1303 just to see children, they have to do 45 hours. Is that correct? For this pediatric endorsement.
Keith.
The way I read it is for someone to get a 1303 permit, as per letter E here, they need to do 30 hours of recognize continuing education in these things. If they want the pediatric endorsement, they need to do 15 credit hours specific to pediatric airway anatomy, physical evaluation, medical conditions, pharmacology, that's specific to the pediatric side of things. So, but
folks get that's what I'm trying to say. The folks that do pediatric sedation only, they don't take the courses for adults anyway. So we're saying to them, we want you to take the adult course, even though that's not what they do.
Well, I think we're just saying you need 30 hours to get
right.
Your 1303. That doesn't have to be an adult. They could take that law right. If they wanted. They would just then have to take
it. Also, then can they apply that? So they can apply that 30 to that 15 if they can.
No, not the way this is written. I don't believe so, at least.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say.
I appreciate what Dr. Caputo is saying. I can see what he is saying here. I can understand what he's getting at. The question is, how do we write it properly to convey what we're really trying to say?
Yeah, and I don't disagree with Dr. Caputo. I think just for clarity's sake, you know, if a 1303 permit holder, if you're going to have a pediatric endorsement as a 1303 permit holder, the way this is written, you're going to need 45 hours, right? 30 to get your 1303 and another 15 to get the pediatric endorsement. So are we saying that's too much? Dr. Caputo, is that where you were going with it?
That's what I mean, because generally speaking, the folks that are – I understand that – you can do different things with a permit, but generally speaking, there always have been two types of oral sedation permit holders. There have been those who just see adults and those who just see children, and therefore they just get training in that specific area. If you said something in the D3 that if their training, that would accomplish training received in their 30 hours, if we could tease that out, to say if you are applying for this and you can demonstrate 15 hours in pediatrics, then I'm fine with it. I don't see a problem.
I think if you look at, Anthony, look at number four. I think that's exactly what that's saying. Initial applicants shall meet the requirements of E1, which is initial applicants for general 1303 permit, to include at least 10 of those 30 in pediatric stuff. D4.
D4?
Oh, it's not in here.
I don't see D4. Yeah.
It's on ours that we got emailed to us.
Well, then maybe give that language to Jessica. I would be fine with that. I hear what you're saying, and that's
yeah. Perfect. So there, she just put it on there. Read that for us.
The initial applicant shall meet. Oh, that was what we took off because we thought, okay. Shall meet the requirements of E1 to include at least 10 hours in the evening. That's fine.
Yeah, and that's what we said, Anthony, about the three case experiences. You know?
Amen.
But this is the thing that we talked about last time. That to do PEDS, you just have to get 10 credit hours in three cases. And we had discussed this.
You get 30. And of those
30. Well, but last time we had talked about an initial applicant that's going to do PEDS, with the two references that we used was going to be 60 hours and 10 cases.
I just think that was a misunderstanding.
Well, I don't know where it went, but we had approved it.
No, I just think it was a misunderstanding. I think the larger discussion was about the number of cases.
Yeah, Dr. Loud, I agree. I thought we all felt, because Dr. Caputo and I both looked at the courses that were available.
No, I remember this. Yeah, I remember the discussion, Randy. Okay. We had talked about that, and then, you know, I think Jason had chimed in and myself, and with the two references we used for somebody just to come out and take 10 credit hours and do three cases, we all thought that was pretty light.
Well, I thought we kind of used the substantiated it with, you know, how California and Texas both, that's kind of the way they roll.
Well, that was the initial presentation, but then we had talked about it after that.
In terms of what?
Well, we just felt that it was to 60 hours and 10 was the, we went with the resource that we have is the ones that's done by ASDA and AMOS that recommended 60 hours of CE and actually 20 cases.
Even to the discussions that we've been having today that Dr. Hero has mentioned a number of times, that training has to be available. And that training is currently not available. So we're basically asking these dentists to go get training somewhere to account for a number. And I'm not exactly sure that's what we want to do. We don't want to make it onerous for them.
No, I agree.
Particularly if we look across states and see that they're not doing. I mean, I think if we're seeing what like states are doing, we want to be in that range. And so I will concede the point on the cases. But I think 60 is well beyond. I think the way the language currently is written, what we're looking at, is more than appropriate for a person that goes the CE route to get this permit with a pediatric endorsement.
Dr. Blazek.
Well, and the only thing I was going to mention was, again, I felt the 1302, we were all on the same board, same page with the pediatric endorsement and the education and the cases. This is the 1303, and that was why I thought we felt it was appropriate to lower the number of cases. But I would agree with Dr. Caputo, the number of CE hours seems a bit excessive for 1303. And the case thing, could we allow them to do cases with other people, which will count towards their 10? So those are options I think I'd be willing to go with.
I mean, if everybody votes on that, I'm fine with it. But I know in the minutes from the meeting before last, we had voted on it and approved on it, the 60 hours and 10 cases. And it's documented that we did that. So, you know, if you guys want to go with the lesser ones, I'm fine with that.
Dr. Arnell.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I don't think it's 60 and 10, it's 30 and 10, is it not? And that's.
Well, it's 30, I think it was 30 for like renewal at one time, and that was changed, but.
Well, historically it's always been 30, I believe, and that's what it says right here is 30. I would support 30 and 10. I do not support 3. That I mean,
no,
that
is, and we had talked about that, and we that put is, it up for a vote, and we had got that, but now we got it in the minutes, but it's never been. You know, that's the part that I just don't understand is why we voted on. And now we're changing our minds.
Yeah, that's my vote is 30 and 10.
So if I think what might be a little confusing, at least is what I'm hearing. If you look at initial applicants, which is letter E, which is for all 1302 providers. Okay. So let's just start there. 1302, this is not pediatric. This is just all 1302 providers. Letter E says you need 30 recognized hours. And then that's under one. And then number two, you need to administer enteral moderate sedation to a minimum of 20 patients. Okay. So that's, and then D4, I read it as of those requirements, the 30 hours, 10 of them should be or need to be in the pediatric thing and 3 cases need to be. So I think to get the permit, they need more than that. But for the pediatric endorsement side of it, we're saying of those totals, only 10 hours and 3 patients need to be emphasized in pediatric. If that's the way I read it, if that's, and I think that's maybe 3 pediatric cases seems really low to me. If we're saying some, I mean, I could go get 3 pediatric cases really quick, especially if I could shadow someone and get them and start administering enteral sedation to a 4-year-old. That seems, not too protective.
The comment contradicted though. So really, because if you go up, it says moderate sedation for enteral moderate sedation for 10 pediatric patients. What I think you probably want to do is where you have the semicolon after emergencies, delete all of that after it and put the period after emergencies. And I think that's going to achieve what you just said better and what everybody else is talking about, the 10 cases.
Matt. So just to have this straight, for a 1302 provider to provide enteral sedation for pediatrics, they need to do 20 cases. Is that correct?
Say that again.
So right now we're looking at 1303 and its requirements, but then in 1302, we just said that they need to do 20 cases. Is that correct?
Correct. Well, not for a pediatric endorsement. They need to do the same, 10.
Okay, 10. Let's just make it the same. Why would we make it different?
No, I think that's, it just got the last sentence of that paragraph, like I said, is confusing. That's that number 4. I would just remove that. If you guys are okay with it, I would tell you to remove the everything after the semicolon and just put the period after medical emergencies. So basically it says, because above it says they have to do 10 pediatric cases. See what I'm saying? As provided enteral moderate sedation for 10 pediatric cases.
The first sentence in paragraph 3.
Yeah, so 4 is just a rider that says 10 of those credit hours have to be in pediatric airway.
Of the 30, correct. So you're focusing on that.
Then why don't we just say 10 of the 30? That's way more clear than what, because the 4 is confusing because people are saying, oh, does that replace what it says above? Let's just say 10 of the 30.
Submit an affidavit indicating Dennis provided moderate sedation for 10 minutes with 2 years immediately maintains a section. Here's embassy. Oh, well, really, what it says now is 15. Oh, here we go on that. I would actually, yeah, so to include at least 10 of the 30.
Wait, so you're right. Up there it does say 15. Let's just get rid of 4. This thing is so confusing.
Well, because you're trying to say that the initial requirement, but that does get addressed in 3. But then again, it goes back to that question of maybe you need to say up in 3 that 15 must be in the area of, I guess it's going to be up to the board to interpret it to say that they'll accept an application where it's 30 hours and they identify 15 in pediatrics.
Yeah, I think 4 just needs to be removed, does it not? I mean, it's all covered in 3.
I might ask you guys to get a board staff interpretation of then how are they going to manage that application when it comes in. Because it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, Matt, about the indication, as Dr. Hero said, it would seem like you need 45 hours if you didn't have something to differentiate that. Or maybe you put it in initial applications that they successfully complete 30 hours, and you maybe put 15, maybe in parentheses or in as a bullet, 15 of those can apply to the pediatric endorsement. Maybe that's a way to do it.
I mean, is there a problem with saying you need 30 hours to get your 1303 and then an additional 15 if you want to do PEDS?
Well, those courses just they're not out there. And again, people don't train in adults to see kids. They just see kids.
There's actually quite a few courses out there.
So you're saying go ahead and do 30 hours in adult sedation and then go do another 15 in pediatric.
I don't think that's unreasonable.
When you're only going to see children.
Well, no, if you're going to see children, you should have more hours than just peds.
I think what Dr. Lau's saying is if you're going to see peds, you can take a course that's dedicated to children. It's just got to be, it would then be 45 hours.
Right.
Yeah, you got to take more hours. You can't have somebody starting to do 2 and 3 year olds with like 15 hours of CE.
And no one's orally sedating 2 and 3 year olds.
Well, there's some late threes that you can sedate and things like that. You start giving these permits, people are going to really sedate all ages, listen.
But you know what? There's no historical evidence to support your statement. It's not happening like that. It's just not happening. And there's no problem with it happening either. So I think that's an issue to be considered.
So I think we should do this. Why don't we take a vote on how many hours? I think the case is in agreement.
Someone has a phone on. Someone has a phone.
Is the echo gone? Okay. I think we need to, as a committee, vote on the hours so we stop that back and forth and then can hone in the language.
Dr. Hero, are you talking specifically for pediatric endorsement?
Yeah, there's an echo again. I think the disagreement stems with the amount of hours that we're going to require a 1303 permit holder to attain to get a pediatric endorsement. And if the hours that are required to get the 1303 permit in general can count towards that or not. So if somebody on one side of the debate wants to make a motion, we can at least see where we are and then kind of hone things in. But rather than going back and forth with how many hours, let's just try to nail that down.
I would make a motion that the requirement to provide anesthesia services in the state of Arizona would need to have 30 CE credit hours. And if you desire a pediatric designation, then 10 of those hours must be in pediatric anesthesia.
And I'll second that. And we'll move to discussion, but as a point of clarification, Dr. Blazik, so the motion is still 30 hours total, not 30 hours plus an additional 10 hours for the pediatric endorsement. Is that correct?
That's kind of what I was saying. Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you. So any discussion? Then, Sherry, let's get a roll call.
Yes. Hero?
Yes.
Arnell?
Here.
Bagai?
Yes.
Blazik?
I'm a yes.
Christensen?
Yes. Yes.
Lout?
Yes. Yes.
Snell?
Yes.
Okay, so motion passes unopposed. So, Jessica, how do we best write the motion? So, hours total, 10 of which have to be devoted to PEDS for pediatric endorsement.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, we're looking at the initial applicants for a 1303 permit right here. It says 30 hours. If they are getting a pediatric endorsement, then 10 of those hours of the 30 can count toward PEDS.
That's what I stated. Yes, that's my motion. And I believe it was open to discussion, and then we had a vote.
She's just confirming the language, Randy.
Okay, thank you, Anthony. Thank you. Yeah.
Initial applicants shall meet the requirements of E1 to include at least 10 credit hours of the 30 hours required in the areas of pediatric airway anatomy, physical evaluation, medical conditions, and medical emergencies. Okay. It seems like everybody is happy with that. We will continue to scroll until someone stops me. So I have a comment here on actually what will be a different letter, but we're still in 1303, enteral moderate sedation, coming down to subsection J, which will not be J, but it'll be a different letter. Should these requirements be for all 1303 permit holders? Or should this only be required for a 1303 permit holder who has, who uses an NDAP?
I think what you're asking, I'm going to paraphrase, is that if you're a 1303 permit holder and you want to use an NDAP, do you need a 1304? And I don't believe we're saying you do. We're saying if you're 1303, you can get an NDAP without a 1304. And I believe we have indicated that in the other permit levels, such as 1301 and 1302. Is that the question?
Yes.
Okay. I believe that is what the consensus of the committee is. Yes.
Well, and from what Sherry said earlier, you can't have two permits. So,
good point.
We kind of have to put that in.
Hi, this is Sherry. Can I clarify that? What historically it was, if you have a 1301, you can do all levels of permits. All levels of sedation. So you wouldn't need any additional permits or two permits. And if you're a 1302, then you're allowed to do 1302 and 1303. And if you have a 1301, 02, or 03, that allows you to hire a medical anesthesiologist or a CRNA. It doesn't specifically say in statute or rule, but that was the thought behind it from what I can recall many years ago.
Okay, but there's nothing that precludes us from giving out two permits if...
No, there is not.
Okay, thank you, Sherry.
Under L in that section. That's for pediatrics.
Sorry, I had my hand raised, but I didn't. Letter M. What's that saying? What is that? What's the intent behind that? It's new, so I mean, it's in blue, so someone put that in there. I just am not.
That's for pediatrics. If the kid sits it out.
Sorry, Anthony. The new letter N. Sorry, my paperwork is M here. I apologize.
Oh, sorry.
Letter N on the screen.
Yeah, I thought we just discussed earlier that we weren't gonna say that basically.
Yeah. I would rephrase that
1303P.
So if I'm hearing you guys correctly, we're looking at N on the screen. And I think that's whether it's necessary.
Yeah, exactly.
And it sounds like it's not.
That's what I would agree with. Because if you're a permit holder, you're able to do subsequent dosing. That's the purpose of having a 1303 permit.
Is this all just in the 1303?
Correct.
Yeah, I think you want to delete that. I think that's the consensus, yeah?
Delete in.
We're getting thumbs up again, Jessica.
I got you guys.
I know how happy that makes you, so I like to make sure you always know.
Thank you.
Do we need O as well? I don't know. I mean,
I would take out O for me.
Yeah, they're not even doing IVs, so
it's not parenteral. They're not doing anything parenteral.
And I think
go away.
So did I hear that? O.
Yeah, you can get
feedback on your computer or phone.
I'm sorry. Let me log out and log back in.
You know, the thing that I like about O, Randy, is that if the permit holder was working with a CRNA or physician, it kind of sets the point that they're only seeing one patient at a time. So I don't know that that's necessarily bad from that perspective, but obviously at your guys' choice. But I do think that's reasonable so that everybody understands, regardless of what's being done in the office, you're only seeing one patient at a time.
I guess in light of, you're right, if he's hired someone to come in, then potentially it could be a long case. I'm just thinking, wow, is it possible to orally sedate someone for 5 hours? I guess that's where I was coming from. I didn't think of it in that way, Anthony.
Well, if we're allowing multiple dosing, then yeah, you could, technically you could sedate someone indefinitely if you're allowing multiple dosing, right?
Yeah, you're probably right. I'll take that back then. I apologize. You guys are right, because actually I have heard of that. Again, local people around here, patients in the chair, which is halcyon for 5 to 8 hours. It's just ridiculous. So I appreciate that point of view. Thank you. I withdraw my initial statement about removing O.
I didn't see whose hand was up first, Dr. Louder, Dr. Snell.
No, I know that the docs courses, they did the Halcyon and everything, and they do last for a while.
Keith.
This is just a check. Are you still getting the same feedback?
Yes.
Yes.
But as long as you're muted, and then we don't get it.
Is that implying that you want me to stay muted, Anthony?
No, not at all. Yes. We'll just,
Dr. Snell can no longer speak.
Yeah, just we won't talk when you speak and then just mute right away so we don't get the feedback.
So we do or don't want the intraosseous access?
Do not.
Thank you.
Yeah, get rid of the osseous, yeah, O, but P, which is now O, is good.
Like O, the new O.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Okay. Anything else on this one, or do you want me to keep scrolling? We're getting real close.
Matt.
I assume we're going to section A now of 1304. The last sentence is repeated here. It's duplicated. So if you go to the end and delete up to where it has permit in blue and then write issued by the board, it will be fixed.
Ali.
I was just going to say, if we're going to dive into 1304, it could take a little while. It's 5:00. Do we want to dive into it on Wednesday?
If everybody's up for it, it'd be nice to go a little longer, just so we're not cutting Wednesday too close.
And we actually we spent a bunch of time on 1304 two meetings ago, because remember we had to clean up 1304 to be able to then go back through all the other permits and reference 1304 and so on. We spent a lot of time on 1304 and it's pretty solid now.
Yeah, there was just a couple things that I wanted to bring up on, but I'm actually in the process of, I've transferred to my phone because I got to take my son to practice, but I can stay on and address the two pieces.
So we basically have about 5 pages left. We're on page 26 of 32. The last page of the document is just reference and notes. So we've basically got 5 pages left. If you guys want to keep going for a little bit longer, we can. It's up to you.
If everybody's okay with it, I think we go a little longer if we can.
So that being said, I will scroll until someone says stop.
Stop. Right there. So that section A, if you look, the last sentence has been repeated.
Yes.
So if you put your cursor in between the very last line between permit and issued.
So what I'll do is one of the things that we have to do when we file rulemakings is make sure that we are using the most current base language, the base language being what is currently in rule as written. So I've made a note here to make sure that what we have in our draft is, in fact, the actual base language. So if it is repeated, then I will adjust it. Unless you guys have an issue with the substance of what this sentence, with the substance of what this is saying, then we are good to go.
Okay, because you do understand it wouldn't change the substance at all, right? It's just it's just a typo.
Correct.
Okay.
Okay, so I will scroll and say stop.
Could you stop, Jessica?
Yes.
So, like I said, I'm working from my phone and getting in the car, but it was in section 1304A1. It talks about the qualifications of the NDAP and references a section in 1301. I looked to see what that reference is, and it doesn't make any sense to me. I'm not sure what that's supposed to be referencing, but what it is referencing now doesn't make any sense.
No, and it won't. A lot of the references, because we have made so many changes, a lot of the internal references will not be accurate. What we'll have to do is we'll have to go through at the very end when we're cleaning up grammar, formatting, things like that. That's when we'll check the not just internal references, but also external to statutes and things like that, and make sure that they are correct in terms of the particular subsection. So you're absolutely right. That is not the correct subsection or internal reference, and that will need to be corrected. And I think one of the things that we've talked about before is that because we're talking about an NDAP, the qualifications that may apply to a dentist may not be the same qualifications that we require from the NDAP. So that will also have to be corrected.
Okay. There was one other section that I wanted to point out. It's a 1304B. I don't know if you got there yet while scrolling. D is in Delta regarding the temporary permit. So in there, sorry, I'm driving. It says something about that the end is on file with the board. Part of 1602 is that all NDAPs are going to have to be registered with their respective board. So my thought was that language might make a little bit more sense if it said that the NDAP is registered with their professional regulatory board.
So here's going to be the clincher and the difficult part. They are going to be registered with their board as a practitioner of whatever it is that they do. So if they're, you know, a nurse and they're registered with the nursing board, fantastic. If they're a doctor and they're registered with the, you know, board for physicians, that's great. The problem is that how do you, as the dental board, regulate, track, keep track of them? And the reason I say that is, so unless you have something that says that they have to register or provide some sort of information to you as the dental board, you don't have the authority to say, you know, whether they're registered with their board or not. All you can say is they have to be registered with their board and you have to be notified in some way. So my understanding in developing this section about the temporary permit and who can use an NDAP was that the board, the dental board, would somehow track or have on file these types of nurses or doctors who are already being used by dentists. And so if that was the case, then fantastic, it makes it a lot easier. But if not, then the dentist who wants to use this nurse or doctor then has to go through these steps.
Right. So I understand that. The registration isn't just being, you know, registered as a practitioner in the state. 1602 makes it so that individuals that want to provide dental anesthesia specifically are registered with the board. So do you get what I'm saying? It's not like registered just verifying a license.
Registered with the
no,
dental board?
With the, no, because the, so they're registered, they'll have to register. Part of 1602 for patient safety was that every CRNA or physician that's providing dental anesthesia has to register with their board to be able to provide dental anesthesia specifically, which, as the respective boards play out this new law are going to have requirements that are going to be in line with the requirements of a dentist who obtains a permit 1301. So they'll be registered with the appropriate regulatory body. And from my understanding, if the boards are following 1602 appropriately, there's going to be a way to verify that those individuals are in fact registered with their board to provide dental anesthesia.
So rather than requiring the dentist to ensure certain things, all the dental board really cares about then at this point is if they are registered by their regulatory board, be it, you know, doctors or nurses or whatever, so long as they're registered under their regulatory board to provide services in the dental setting, that's fine.
No, I didn't think so.
They still would be permitting the dentist. So the dentist is obtaining the permit, not the non-dentist anesthesia provider.
Correct. But what we're talking about here is a dentist who is utilizing an NDAP who is on file with the board. What you're telling me is that thanks to 1602, the board doesn't have to track any of that information. The board isn't concerned about who's on file with the board. What the board's really concerned about is if the NDAP is licensed through their regulatory board to provide those anesthesia services in a dental setting.
That's what I feel is appropriate because it places the regulatory burden under the appropriate board.
So, Ali, this section is not about obtain. This is about getting a temporary permit. And the 1304 is in place already. This section was designed to make it easier for someone who is an NDAP already providing services in other offices to be able to go in to a new office and let them have a temporary permit to make it easier for that CRNA or physician to be used. This is not about, I mean, if we remove this, then it actually makes it harder on you.
Well, I'm not worried about whether it's harder or not. I'm thinking about the appropriate regulatory oversight. So to me, it just doesn't seem necessary that the dental board is keeping track of NDAPs when their own regulatory bodies are already going to keep track of that and publish it in some manner.
Ali, this is the fundamental issue. The dental board needs to be able to know who is coming into dental offices and providing anesthesia. I don't think anybody questions that. And to get a 1304, part of it is letting the dental board know who's coming in. Now, this section here says if this person is somebody that the dental board is already familiar with, that has already the dental board has already been notified that they're coming in, then it eases or it smooths that process. But the dental board should never be put in a position where they simply don't know who is coming into dental offices to provide anesthesia. And it has been made as simple as can possibly be. It's essentially a form that lists the credentials of the provider and who they are. I just don't see it being any more simple than that.
Jessica.
I'd agree with that, Matt. I think we're doing a pretty good job just trying to expedite the 1304 process.
Jessica?
So really what we're dealing with here is you're absolutely correct. The particular regulatory board, whether it's doctors or nurses or whoever it is, they're the ones who are going to authorize their licensees to provide those services in a dental setting. What's going on here is that you are looking to give your dentists a license, temporary or otherwise, to work with or employ those other professionals to then provide those services. That's different than actually trying to regulate those nurses or doctors and what they need in order to provide those services. What you're talking about here is making sure that your dentists have the authority and the proper permits to work with those other professionals. And to what extent do you want your dentists to, you know, make sure that they are registered with the nursing board or with the medical board to operate in, excuse me, in a dental setting? I would assume that now with 1602, that if they do get that permission, certificate, license, whatever it is, from their own regulatory board that says, yes, you can provide these services in a dental setting for a dental office, for a dentist, then that's really all you need your dentist to do, is to make sure that they have that permission, certification, license, whatever it is, from the regulatory board that regulates the nurse or the doctor. Additionally, when you look at, okay, now that I've employed this NDAP who is certified through their own board to provide these services to me as a dentist, what else do I need to do as the supervising dentist? You know, what do I need to do in terms of making sure that they have the right equipment, the right medications, the right, you know, whatever it is, supervision, you know, guidelines for discharge, all of that? That's what you're looking at from the dentist standpoint. If all you're looking to do is to say, yes, dentist, you can work with one of these licensees from these other professional boards, so long as those other professional boards have said that, yes, they can work for a dentist, then that's one thing. To the extent that that's helpful, I think that's kind of where we're at with 1602.
I think that was well said.
Yeah, but Jessica, it sounds like you were saying what I'm saying, that them being registered with their board and the dentist verifying that. The issue that I see is there's no requirement that an NDAP registers with the dental board. And this says that it would be, they can do a temporary permit if the NDAP is known to the dental board. How is the NDAP known to the dental board other than verifying that they're registered with their respective board, that because of 1602, they are going to be required to register with?
I can answer that question. The way that they're known to the dental board is listed right here, as it says that that NDAP is already working in a dental office, and the dental board has the paperwork from that 1304 permit. So the 1304 permit has paperwork where the dentist essentially verifies the credentials of the provider, provides it to the dental board, and then it isn't a registration with the dental board. It's simply that the dental board knows who this person is and knows what their credentials are. And then this section, Section D, is just an attempt to make that easier on you guys, since somebody has already gone through the process of making vetting the credentials of this provider and confirming that they do the things that need to be done to safely provide anesthesia in a dental office. Then when they go to another office, they can get a temporary permit to make it easier.
Jessica. But,
so I think we're getting our wires crossed just a little bit. This is to obtain, for a dentist, to obtain a temporary Section 1304 permit, which, my understanding, limited as it is, a Section 1304 permit is basically just allowing them to bring in an NDAP to provide those anesthesia and sedation services to their patients. And if that's the case, then what this section is attempting to do is that instead of waiting and going through the, you know, however long it may be, process of getting a regular Section 1304 permit in order to employ or work with an NDAP, this allows them to get essentially an immediate permit, temporary, so that they can get that NDAP in their office sooner rather than later. What this is saying is that if the NDAP that they're using is already somebody who another dentist is using, then great, fantastic. We don't need nearly as much information. The issue here, I think, is that now with 1602, you don't need necessarily as much information from the NDAP or from, rather, from your dentist ensuring the information from the NDAP, because the NDAP has already been licensed, certified, whatever it is from their own board to provide those services. I think the issue here is that whatever you want to require from your dentist is what's necessary. So before 1602, you wanted them to make sure that they had the right certifications, the right education, the right experience, the right, you know, PALs, all of those sorts of things before you even worked with them or employed them as an NDAP in your dental practice. Now with 1602, essentially 1602 has said, okay, excuse me, we're going to basically license, certify, whatever it is, our own nurses, doctors, whoever it is, to provide those anesthesia and sedation services in your dental office. So you don't need to worry about whether they have PALs or if they have done X amount of course credit or if they did, you know, X, Y, and Z of education or CODA. Basically, you're now, excuse me, relying on the other professional regulatory agencies to certify their own licensees. And all you need to say is, as a dentist, you can work with that NDAP. You can work with this, you know, nurse. You can work with this doctor, so long as they have obtained, you know, that particular designation from their own regulatory agency to work with dentists. And if that's the case, then a lot of this isn't necessary. And the only issue you run up against is a temporary situation where somebody needs one of these nurses or doctors to provide the anesthesia or sedation services right away. And they don't have a 1304 permit that says that they can work with one of those licensees. That's the issue.
So I was very heavily involved with 1602, and 1602 does not say you don't need to worry about that. That isn't the intent of 1602. 1602, the intent of 1602 wasn't to say that the dental board can't require their licensees to vet non-anesthesia or non-dental anesthesia providers. So 1602 just put in some requirements for their boards to essentially, you know, license them to do anesthesia in the dental office. But the dental board has no control over what these boards decide, what requirements they put in or lack of requirements they put in. And the dental board has to be able to function independent of whatever they do, and has to have standards. You know, the dental board chooses the standards for dentistry. The nursing board does not. The medical board does not. Dentistry chooses the standards for dentistry. And our standards are very, very reasonable. Basically, the standard is we know their credentials, and they have to have the same equipment and drugs as our licensees. And 1602 does not change that. It does not remove that ability of the dental board to do that. It does not say from now on all, you know, the dental board doesn't need to make their licensees confirm those things.
Dr. Caputo, go ahead. And Jessica has a hard stop in 5 minutes.
Yeah. So real quick, I mean, I think we're getting in the weeds a little bit here with 1602. 1602 is a pathway for registration of providers. This is purely about what we're requiring of our dentist to work with an NDAP. And I think it's pretty clear. And actually, I think it's very well written. And I think that's what you want to focus on. And you guys probably move on from there. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, you're kind of echoing what I was going to say. Ollie, just one second. Jessica, are you comfortable with the way this is written, or did you have specific questions regarding this language?
So I have some questions in the comments. You know, we're talking about essentially creating a whole new permit. It's a temporary 1304 permit. What does temporary mean? Does that mean it expires in 90 days? Can it be extended? If so, what's the process for extending that temporary permit? Does it expire automatically? Does the board issue it automatically? So just kind of procedure and process wise, those are some of the questions that I have. To the extent that the answers to those questions place any sort of burden on your licensees, that's going to have to go into rule. If they have to, you know, request an extension of a temporary permit within a certain amount of time, if they have to provide certain information on an application to extend it, you know, those sorts of things are issues that need to be addressed when you're looking at creating essentially what is a brand new permit, albeit temporary. I don't know if that answers your question or just creates more. Sorry.
A little bit of both. Ollie.
So I guess my concern with using it this way as someone who's known to the board, you know, and I've mentioned before the way that the current process is and it wouldn't change with this is that a dentist who obtains a 1304 could get the permit, say, with me, right? And I'm listed on their permit as the provider they're going to use. Now I'm known to the dental board. That dentist could bring in another provider. It could be a provider that's never assisted a dentist in getting a 1304 that's in doing dental anesthesia. So that's my thing is, how do they become known to the board? We have this new process that they're going to have to register with their own respective board. Why not use that to verify who these people are?
Dr. Arnell.
So, you know, the 1304 itself, talking of laying the 1304 temporary aside, the 1304 itself is very well written. We don't need the 1304 temporary. We really don't. We just did it as a courtesy to our colleagues. I think it would be very easy to line out and say, you know, the average 1304 comes in 37 days, so let's make a 1304 good for 45 days, and then it expires. In regards to Ali's question, every 1304 requires that provider to vet and list the credentials of the NDAP that's coming in. Then that's how they're known to the board. So someone who's never worked in a 1304 setting, an NDAP that's never been in a 1304 setting, can't do that. But, you know, I think it would be very easy to line it out and make it usable as a courtesy to our colleagues. But if it's going to be complicated, let's just ditch the 1304 temporary and stick with the 1304 that we have worked really hard to make solid and is fair to everybody and allows the dental board to have requirements for their licensees.
Ollie.
Crashing the 1304 is a nuclear option here, right? All I'm presenting is a way that provides a simple verification that's going to be in place. That's all I'm trying to do here, to be able to have, be able to identify who would be a known provider. So.
But it's an impossibility, Ali, because the dental board needs to have, the dental board should be able to say how they want that information. We have no idea what these other boards will do or how long it will take them. They have no time limit in 1602. It could be 10 years from now. We can write it into ours and have it be done on a simple form. And that's a whole lot easier than what it's going to take with all these boards. I guarantee you it's going to take a long time for them to write the protocol.
Okay, I think Jessica's done, so we should probably wrap up.
Yeah. Anthony, I was just going to say, I vote for motion we move. So anyway.
You cut out, Randy. What was that?
I said, Anthony, I was just motion or vote that we move on and leave it as it is. But anyways, we're going to stop anyway so we can take it up next time.
Yeah. Perfect. Sounds good. So we'll adjourn the meeting.
Thank you. Hold on.
Second.
Thank you, everybody. We'll see you on Wednesday. Appreciate everybody making themselves available.